Nick!
Gentlemen!
Nick's your buddy. Kind of guy you can drink a beer with.
Start your engine!
My papa's son wandering out a smoking gun. Now some of you would live through me and lock me up and throw away the key, or just find a place to hide away and hope that I'll just go away, huh. But I feel alright, I feel alright tonight. Feel alright. I feel alright tonight. And I bring you precious contraband and ancient tales from
history. Alright, alright, alright. Good morning, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, 18 stories above downtown Chicago. We're here till 5 a.m. It's Monday morning, so that means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. And we'll have the Monday morning movie reviews in just a few minutes. Eric Childress and Jim Laskowski join me every Monday morning to review the new movies. We've got new movies to talk about. We'll also talk about the box office as well for the weekend. Also, we are going to be chatting a little bit about minor events that actually changed pop culture and the world. Things that you're doing wrong, which we wanted to get to last week, didn't have time. Maybe we'll get to it this morning. And then we'll reminisce a little bit about some live-action Saturday morning shows because they're just weird. A lot of them were just weird. You know, growing up, when I grew up, there was a lot of weird stuff on TV for kids. Like, Saturday morning was weird. So that's all that's coming up. Our phone number is 312-981-7200 for our talk and text. You can also... check us out on Twitter. You can follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show, and also on our Facebook page, facebook.com/Nick D Show. So that's what's coming up here on this Monday morning, and we'll jump into the movie reviews in just a few minutes. So my producer, Tom Hush, suddenly felt a little under the weather and had to go home. So we're kind of scrambling around right now. Sammy's going to come in, who just produced... the WGN radio theater, and he's going to jump over and help us out this morning and produce the show. He's got a little work he's got to do over there, and then he'll come in. But we're hoping Tom feels better. He went home sick. He didn't want to get anybody else here at the station sick, which was very thoughtful of him. So anyway, he went home, and we hope he feels much better and is back to 100% for tomorrow's show. Helping us out a little bit here is Dan Long, who is now an engineer here, used to be a producer, and just is helping us with this transition until we get Sammy in the room. How you doing, Dan?
Doing all right.
Okay. All right. He's helping out. Thank you for helping out, man. I appreciate it.
Hey, that's what I'm here for.
Exactly. All right. And in the newsroom, it's Vic Vaughn. Vic, how are you?
I'm doing very well, sir. How are you?
I'm all right. I'm all right.
Good.
Did you have a good weekend?
I had a great weekend, man. Let me think. Now, if I can remember what I did. Well, you know, yesterday I stayed inside. Oh. I canceled two things that I had planned to do yesterday because I looked outside and said, nope, mm-mm.
I, you know,
Saturday, nice day, though. I had a good time Saturday.
What'd you do on Saturday?
I went out to the far northwest suburbs and spent the day with my family. Yeah. Oh, my mom, my brother, saw my sister, some of the little nieces and nephews.
Oh, that's
yeah,
cool.
So it was really nice.
That's fun. That's cool.
Yep, always good.
Yeah, yesterday morning when I woke up and looked out the window, I was like, "What is happening?"
I did not expect it to look that bad.
Man,
it was historical. It was one for the record books.
I've lived here my whole life, and I know it snows in April. You know, but man, I looked out the window and I was just like, it sucked all the energy out of me. I just looked out and went, you gotta be kidding me.
I know. It was like a slap in the face.
Oh, my God.
Because, I mean, really, I really didn't think it was going to be that bad. That was the worst according to those who watched the weather historical books, that was the worst April 14th on record.
Yeah,
for this area,
I would agree with that. I mean, I'm not surprised by that at all.
Yeah.
But man, and it just seems like it's just this winter. It's never going to end. You know what I mean? It's just, doesn't this seem like this one of the worst winters we've ever had? I mean, with that polar vortex, and then we got hit with we had a blizzard at one point, and then there was we got snow dumped on us, and now April 14th, and we're getting 6 inches of snow in the city.
Yeah, when you rattle them off like that, it was a cold winter.
It was terrible,
man. Really was.
I mean, that polar vortex was ridiculous.
That's some cold weather
with
right
like
there.
60 below wind chill and stuff. Oh my God. So it's enough to just suck the energy right out of you, man. I mean, jeez. And then what is it supposed to be? By Thursday, it's supposed to be 70.
Yeah, we'll rebound. hopefully that was. You think that was the last one? Are you going to go out on 11?
I'm not going to say anything, man.
I'm not either.
Let me tell you something. My birthday is July 6th. I'm surprised we don't get 7 inches on my birthday. I wouldn't be surprised at this moment at all. No, it's just so. And I also thought it was really, you know, and it was really funny because, like, all the posts, you know, on Facebook, people from Chicago, you know, were posting these pictures and everything. And how many Game of Thrones jokes were thrown around too? Like the whole winter is coming, winter is here. I found it to be pretty hilarious that this kind of snow hits us on the day that the Game of Thrones final season premieres. I thought that was hilarious, and people jumped all over that. I mean, that joke was. I can't tell you the number of times there were Game of Thrones jokes from people in Chicago all over my Facebook page.
See, those jokes go right over my head because I've never watched it.
Well, the show, the catchphrase of the show is "Winter is coming."
Oh, okay.
That's
okay.
The catchphrase of the show is "Winter is coming," and you know, winter is here now that it's premiered. So for a year and a half, people have been with Game of Thrones fans, of which I'm not one. But Game of Thrones fans have been waiting for a year and a half for the new season. I think it was the end of 2017 when there was the last episode. So, you know, the fans of Game of Thrones have been waiting, you know, very, very impatiently. And this is the final season, so it's a big deal. And so, you know, for this gigantic snowstorm to happen on the day that Game of Thrones premieres, I thought was pretty funny.
Perfect timing.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty funny. Somebody posted on, you know, like a bunch of people posted on Facebook, like, "Hey, nice advertising technique there, HBO." You know, like they programmed the snow so that it would coincide exactly on the same day as the Game of Thrones premiere. So, yeah, but I mean, I would imagine the ratings were probably through the roof because everybody was waiting for the show.
Did the first episode of season one air, I guess?
It did.
Okay.
Yeah, it aired.
I'm still considering maybe trying to get into it.
This is season eight now.
Eight, yeah. And I watched season one, episode one, a couple of weeks ago because I thought, you know what, let me give it a shot. And so I watched it. Personally, I thought there was too much sex. It kind of was distracting.
Well, then,
but somebody told me, "Well, you got to watch it." It took me 3 or 4 episodes before I really got into it. So I'm thinking about maybe giving it a shot.
I stopped watching it about halfway through the first season because
really?
There was at time I was just like, "I don't even know what the hell's going on."
The only reason why I'm kind of want to give it a shot is because the cinematography looks really good to me.
Oh,
and
listen.
I've heard the battle scenes are great. So those are two things. Those are two huge pluses for me. But I don't know.
The technical aspect of that show is top notch.
Is it? Okay.
Oh yeah. I mean, they spend every money that every dime that they spend is on screen. Looks beautiful. The effects are great. I mean, really. So technically, it's top notch stuff. It's just that I kind of didn't care about it after a while. So anyway, but I'm sure a ton of people right now are like, "Shut up, Nick. It's awesome." So, all right. Well, listen, we got a break here because we've got the movie reviews coming up. Eric Childress and Jim Liskowski are going to join me as they do every week to talk about all the new movies. We'll review the new movies and we'll talk box office as well right after we break here. Tonight on WGN-TV, the Cubs pay a visit to Starlin and the Marlins. Cubs Marlins tonight at 6 on WGN-TV Sports.
Thank you.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. And we are here until 5 a.m. I'm your overnight dude, 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, the great Steve Cochran at 6 for your Monday morning drive. It is Monday, and that means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. We're also going to talk about 15 minor events that actually changed pop culture in the world forever. There's a lot of good stuff there. And then we're going to talk about some old-school live-action Saturday morning shows that'll bring back a lot of weird memories, especially for people who grew up like I did in the 70s when everything was just everything that was aimed at children in the 70s was just weird. So so we're going to take a walk back through that. But it is Monday morning. That means we got to review all the new movies. Eric Childress and Jim Liskowski join me every Monday morning to talk about the movies, review the new ones, and to talk about box office. Eric writes a piece about the box office every week, and we'll talk about that and analyze the box office and all that cool stuff. So our phone number is 312-981-7200 if you want to join us for talk or text. And let's welcome the guys to the show. Here's Eric. Eric, welcome.
Thank you.
And Jim, welcome.
Hello, Nick.
All right. So did you guys both go to Star Wars Village or whatever the hell that was?
I did.
So
I did not. I did not.
Okay. So they had like a Star Wars celebration at McCormick Place, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, this is sort of the annual Star Wars thing. I mean, there's, you know, there's Comic-Con, and, you know, we have a bunch of things here, Wizard World and stuff that comes from Chicago.
Right.
But this is only held once a year, and it's held in a different city every year. And this is, I guess, it's the first time it's ever come to Chicago.
Well, I don't remember this, you know, ever being here before.
I would have remembered it.
Is there a specific reason why that it's in April?
I don't think so.
Because I mean, the movie,
is it every April? I don't remember if that's the case or not.
Because the first Star Wars movie opened in May,
right? May 25th, 1977.
Right. So you would think maybe that would be the time that they would do this.
Yeah, and I think that it might just be a shifting thing because I'm pretty sure that they've had the Star Wars celebration in May in other cities. I honestly don't know the logistics of that.
Okay. And then, of course, we have the extra May the 4th, which is a Star Wars.
Right. Exactly.
It's just, and I got all confused because I actually thought May the 4th was when the movie was released.
No.
But May the 4th
is just a very May the 4th, May the 4th.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, how was it?
It was pretty amazing.
Yeah.
I got to go there for a couple hours on Saturday. And just walking in there, it has the feel in a way, you know, I mean, it looks like, you know, if you've ever been to any kind of Comic-Con or Wizard World and whatnot, and you go onto the dealer floor and stuff like that, I mean, that's exactly what it feels like. I mean, but it's primarily, you know, it's like 80% Star Wars memorabilia and dealers and people crafting new things and Lego and, you know, Funko Pop and all those kind of stuff that you expect to be there.
Yeah.
But, you know, for a Star Wars fan, you know, particularly the one that I've been for most of my life.
Yeah.
There's a real sense of community. There's a real sense of nostalgia in the whole thing. It felt like taking a trip through my childhood memories.
Oh, that's cool.
Honestly.
That's cool.
Because just the way that everything was set up, I mean, they had little exhibits and things, you can photo opportunities where they had recreations of like the Millennium Falcon, and they had a whole Lego set full of like 50,000 Lego pieces of little stormtroopers and stuff. There's just all kinds of things throughout. They had, I just happened to walk in the middle of the floor. They had like a big stage where they would bring out certain people, and they were having like little Star Wars interviews and like that. And there wasn't a lot of the big names and whatnot. But it just happened. Julian Glover came out, and I got to see Julian Glover interviewed, which is not just a Star Wars connection, but also a Indiana Jones connection,
right.
And a Game of Thrones connection for that matter. So that was pretty cool. But yeah, I mean, I just for 2 hours, I felt I was like in my own wonderland.
Did they have any other?
And it was just, you know,
were there any other celebrity guests there that were doing signings or anything?
Oh, yeah. No, there was a ton of people there doing signings. On Friday, obviously, was the day they announced the trailer. The teaser that came out. So J.J. Abrams, the main cast were there. Kathleen Kennedy was there. They did this launch on Friday.
They were there on Friday, really?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, Boyega, Ridley, Oscar Isaac, Anthony Daniels. A little surprise appearance, if you've seen the trailers, a little surprise appearance at the very end of that trailer that you asked me about.
Yeah.
That actor, and what was cool, if people have seen what had happened on Friday, I watched the live stream of it, so I didn't have to fight the traffic and the lines on Friday.
Sure.
But they showed the teaser, and everyone euphoric when they announced the title and whatnot, and that laugh comes up.
Yeah.
The lights came back on, and the entire stage had been cleared, except for that actor. and then he did
cool.
the voice.
That's pretty cool.
And just said, roll it again. And they played the teaser a second time.
That's pretty cool. I got to say, that's awesome. That's really, I bet people went nuts.
It was insane. I mean, seriously, I got emotional watching the teaser and watching that title come up. I mean, it was fantastic. And today they announced it was another big announcement where because they announced this whole Disney Plus channel is coming in November.
Right, right.
You know, and so the first live action Star Wars television show is coming to Disney Plus in November called The Mandalorian.
Right.
So, and Favreau's doing that.
Oh, wow.
So Jon Favreau was there today along with Pedro Pascal, Gina Carano, and Carl Weathers are in the show.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
All right.
So they were all there to announce announce it. But on the streaming service today, they actually, when they were just like, okay, you want to see some footage from The Mandalorian? And everyone's, yay! And then just like, okay, if you're streaming this at home, we got to black this out.
Oh.
So I'm sitting there like, you know, watching Blizzard out my window, trying to watch this thing, and we will be back in 3.5 minutes. And then they came back, and everyone's cheering. I'm like, well, I didn't get to see anything.
Oh, man.
So that kind of sucked. But it, I mean, all part of this whole, you know, the weekend and whatnot, and even just being there for a couple hours and buying a couple little trinkets and stuff like that, and just seeing the cosplay and the little kids just always warm my heart. So whether they're meant to be in costume or they don't even realize what they're doing there, frankly.
Right.
It's so much fun seeing little boys and girls, be immersed in this world and so in some way. So it's like, no matter whatever you think of Star Wars, there's something really special about this fan base that embraces it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the way I feel every weekend, flashback weekend, because, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm such a horror fanatic, and
right.
And I especially love it when little kids are dressed up in, like, really inappropriate costumes.
Yeah. Well, they're especially.
Yeah. And it's really, if I can't tell you the number of little girls that have clearly seen The Ring a bunch of times, because there's a lot of little Ring girls walking around at flashback convention.
Yeah. One is too many.
Yeah.
For me.
Exactly. Well, all right. That sounds like it must have been a blast for the Star Wars fans out there.
It really was.
And did it take up, I mean, McCormick Place is huge. Did it take up a lot of space?
Well, I think it took up all the space.
Oh.
Yeah, I mean, whatever they the one dealer floor. I mean, the entire thing was completely blocked off and everything. So, parking lot was full. It was a pretty and they were utilizing the theater across the street, the arena.
Yeah.
The Wintrust Arena. They were using that for a lot of the. That's where they announced the teaser segment. I think that's where they had the Mandalorian thing today.
Yeah.
So then they were filling that up, and the bleachers and the chairs and the floor within that place.
I'm not surprised that the turnout was massive, especially if it's only once a year and it's in a different city every year.
Right. Yeah. You know? I mean, colleagues that I've known were flying in to Chicago for this.
Yeah.
So it's a pretty massive event.
Yeah. Well, that's pretty cool. I'm glad you had a good time, man. That sounds
it was so much fun.
That sounds like a real treat for the Star Wars fans. And are you must be excited about Chapter 9 there.
Oh my God. Oh my God! I I've watched it like six times already, and then I got to see it at the convention. They took a break and they showed it on the big screens at the convention on Saturday, and I watched it there. And I recorded on my phone, just me watching the trailer. It was just oh my God! You know, yeah. People are all psyched for Endgame in a couple weeks. My Endgame comes out in December.
Yeah. Okay. All right. And it's what, the 22nd it comes out, right?
Is that the day? I think that's the day, yeah.
I think it's December 22nd, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that is the date. Okay, well, there you go. All right, Eric, thanks for telling us about that, man.
Sure thing.
Okay, and everybody hang on. Jim and Eric, hang on. We're going to take a break for the news. When we come back, we'll jump right into the new movies. Lots of new movies to talk about and box office as well. That's all coming up right here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here till 5 a.m. It is Monday morning. That means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke. We're going to talk about some crazy live-action Saturday morning shows from the past. And we've got some minor events that actually changed pop culture and the world forever. And we'll chat about that as well. Our phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk or text. You can also follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. Stay connected with us on our Facebook page at facebook.com/Nick D Show. All right. Eric Childress and Jim Laskowski join me every Monday morning to review the new movies. And then Eric sticks around and we talk about the box office. Let's get these guys back. Eric, welcome back.
Thank you.
And Jim, welcome back.
Thank you much.
All right. Jim, why don't you tell us about Diane?
Happy to. So this comes to us from writer-director Kent Jones, who, you know, is mainly revered as a film critic, and he's made some really interesting documentaries about filmmakers, including the Hitchcock-Truffaut one that came out a few years ago, and a really interesting one about Elia Kazan, which he collaborated with Martin Scorsese with that one. So this is his first fictional feature narrative, and the title character here is played by the great Mary Kay Place, and she's a widower who has a tendency to put others before herself, and she spends most of her time looking after a very ill cousin, and she also makes sure to spend time with friends at various discount buffets, and this all sort of takes place in a very weathered winter out in Massachusetts. Her son, Brian, played by Jake Lacy, who you might remember from Obvious Child, is a struggling addict, and he's been in and out of rehab and remains a very concerning figure in Diane's life, of course. And the film first finds him, you know, on the couch, making excuses for not wanting to find steady employment, and is just kind of being really, really hard on his mother, which is not a pleasant sight to see, but she's very resilient, and she's trying her best. And outside of her son, she spends quality time with a friend named Bobby, played by the wonderful Andrea Martin, and they basically just spend time, you know, helping out the community and serving food at a homeless shelter together. But, you know, as the film goes on, we sort of learn to discover that she's kind of motivated by some guilt involving a past transgression. So, you know, this sort of fuels the need for her to take care of others, including, like I mentioned, her son and her cousin, but she's also trying to keep her distance and work on self-care and just basically cope with the stress and drama that she's facing on a constant basis. So really that's all there is to it here, because once again we have a real intimate character study about a woman struggling to deal with trauma from the past and drama in the present. I saw this last year at the Chicago International Film Festival, and at the time, I couldn't help but think a little bit of the work of Kenneth Lonergan, who gave us, you know, something, Manchester by the Sea and You Can Count on Me. And I would say that this film kind of falls in that same ballpark. This is like a very kind of raw experience where there's depression, there's grief, there's regrets. And so it's not always, you know, easy to watch, you know, Diane go through all the things that she's going through. But at the same time, you're kind of riveted by the performances. I mean, like I mentioned, Andrea Martin kind of has a really nice supporting role, but this is really the Mary Kay Place show, and it's absolutely worth seeing if you've been a fan of hers over the years, and you should be. But at the same time, it's a heavy movie, and it's kind of grim at certain instances. But it's also, you know, kind of a moving exploration of loneliness in its latter half. But I gotta say, it's not always easy to watch, but I would say it's worth seeing for another great performance by Mary Kay Place. It doesn't break new ground. I don't think it's quite on par with something like Manchester by the Sea, but if you like that film or films like that, there's a real good possibility you'll respond to this one too. So I'm recommending Diane.
Okay. All right. I'm a big fan of Mary Kay Place, man. She's a terrific actress. Always liked her.
Absolutely.
All right. Eric, yeah. Why don't you tell us about After?
Okay, well, this is the latest in the series of young adult romance novels that have made their way to the big screen. This one concerns a woman or a young girl who is on her way to her freshman year at college. She's kind of, you know, all her future's ahead of her. She's, you know, kind of keeps to herself, but she does have a younger boyfriend who's still a senior in high school. Mom drops her off at school, and of course, you know, she immediately is, her roommate is a lesbian who smokes a lot of weed, and there's a bad boy on campus with a British accent who's just kind of, the more he pays attention to her, the less she's interested, but the less he pays attention to her, the more she's interested in him. And they sort of circle around this dance for a little while until they eventually give in to each other's mutual attraction for one another. Boyfriend be damned back home, I guess. This is that's the story of their burgeoning relationship. And that's about all there is to this story. And the first thought I had watching this movie is that there seems to be something very like a kind of like a teenage version of the 50 Shades movies. Not that this movie involves any kind of kinky sex or anything like that. This is a very PG-13 movie that you would, you know, could almost see like a Nicholas Sparks, minus the disease stuff, you know, kind of doing. But I couldn't escape the fact that it just kind of has this sort of flavor to it, and I couldn't figure out why, other than watching the movie, thinking that this is a movie that actually kind of sets the women's movement back a few years in a sort of depiction of this young girl who basically is about to give everything up and give herself over to this kind of jerkhead who's just kind of following her around. So doing some research as to why this movie could possibly even exist, the young adult novel was written as another piece of fan fiction by the author who was writing this romance story involving band members from One Direction. Yeah. Yes. Yes. And if people know the story of the 50 Shades books, the origins of that is that it was the original author was doing Twilight fan fiction. And basically, what if, you know, Edward and, you know, what's her face, ended up having kinky sex.
Right.
But this one is just, she wanted to put the couple of the bandmates of One Direction in a story, and this is what came out. And there's nothing to it. There's literally no semblance of any kind of coherent drama, what we're really rooting for. These characters are barely half-dimensional. She's kind of a horrible person, considering what she's doing to her boyfriend. The boyfriend is a complete bag, who's just, he's not even like an interesting bad boy in any sense of the word, sense of the term. And it actually all leads up to a twist that basically just sort of announces itself as just sort of another remnant of the kind of spate of 90s teen comedies that we were getting from that period. Without giving away the twist, I won't tell you which teen movies I'm referring to, but pretty much all of them. And I just, by the end of it, I was just like, I could not believe that someone decided that this was worthy of a film version. Fan fiction, One Direction, turned into 90s, you know, not, I mean, Nicholas Sparks, I think, has never done anything this pointless. Don't know why anyone would flock to a story like this. Like I said, I think it's depiction of a young woman in flux, is not a good one. It wouldn't have been great 10 years ago. It's certainly not good today. But hey, you know, it made some money this weekend, more than another movie that probably should have made more. But we'll talk about that in the box office.
Yeah, I don't even want to discuss that. I
mean, we will though.
I'm just beside myself.
Me too.
All right. Well, that's after.
Yeah, Harry Styles fan fiction. People, okay. Enjoy it.
All right, well, there it is. It's out there, and you can see it if you choose to do so. All right, why don't we take a break here, guys, so we can jump
okay.
in. We'll jump into some more of the movies. Mm-hmm. You guys hang on a second. Eric Childress, Jim Laskowski are with us. They join us every Monday morning, and we're reviewing the new movies, and we also will talk about the box office and who were the winners and the losers over the weekend at the theaters. So that's all coming up. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We'll take a quick break when we come back. More movie reviews with the guys right after this. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. It is Monday, and that means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke, because it's a jokey time. And we're doing the Monday morning movie reviews. Also coming up, we're going to be talking about some old-school Saturday morning live-action shows and 15 events that actually changed pop culture. We're going to do that in a little bit later. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. For talk and text, and let's welcome Eric Childress and Jim Laskowski back. Eric, welcome back.
Thank you.
And Jim, welcome back.
Thank you much.
All right, now I did not get to see this movie, but I'm really, really, really curious about it. Jim, tell us about High Life.
Oh boy. So this is the latest from French filmmaker Claire Denis, whose previous films I've liked quite a bit, particularly White Material and Beau Travail. But I believe this is her first all-English-language production, if I'm not mistaken. And we follow a group of death row inmates, and they're imprisoned for crimes that are kind of vaguely outlined, but they've all been offered a chance at redemption if they will man this particular space mission to investigate what is known as the Penrose Process, which is a real theory proposed by physicist Roger Penrose, whereby energy might be extracted from a region close to a black hole. Very timely movie to see in light of some recent news in science. So if they can accomplish this, they might be able to do some good for planet Earth. But while there is a captain on board, we're mainly focused on this authority figure, a controlling doctor played by Juliette Binoche, who has kind of a grim backstory herself, and seems less invested in the mission. She's very dedicated to the sanctity of human life, and just trying to master the art of reproduction and genetics. She essentially harvests the sperm of all the men on board, all except the voluntarily celibate Monty, played by Robert Pattinson. And the doctor seems kind of obsessed with the fact that he's choosing to be celibate, and she's essentially wanting to, you know, have all the women that are on board hopefully become pregnant. So there's a lot going on with all of these characters. They all have little individual stories, but at the beginning of the film, we already know that somebody does successfully indeed get pregnant, because we are first following Monty, and he's interacting with a newborn baby. The film then sort of flashes back to tell the tale that I just set up, and of course what happened to the rest of this crew, and also what happens to the father and daughter much later on. So the narrative is kind of jumpy, and this is a very weird, daring movie. Like I mentioned, I'm kind of a fan of this director and weird, daring movies. And as I was watching this, I found it to be really challenging in how gross and creepy it just felt at times. And of course, some of the things you see on screen are unpleasant, to say the least. It sort of reminded me if maybe David Cronenberg did a prison movie in outer space. And, you know, because it's interesting that it's not just about trying to reach this black hole or preserving and creating human life. It's kind of about incarceration and isolation and the psychological toll that it can have. It's this weird middle ground between something like Solaris and maybe something like Shock Corridor, where it kind of showcases the mental exhaustion of being trapped and disturbed, surrounded by disturbed, selfish people who also happen to have a lot of sexual energy, I'll say. I think it looks great. The score is really brooding and creepy. There's a very memorable sequence involving a particular pleasure machine, we'll say, that is kind of something out of the last season of Twin Peaks. It's a sight to behold. There might be a couple of moments I don't quite understand, including what happens to Andre Benjamin, who shows up here too. And there's some character decisions that didn't quite make sense for me, but I found it myself engaged, intrigued by it. I think Pattinson in particular continues his streak of choosing very interesting movies and giving compelling performances. I don't know if it's a great movie necessarily, because I'm not sure if I was able to make complete sense of it on a first viewing. The ending is quite ambiguous. But I think it's worth checking out if you like to be challenged and disturbed in ways you don't normally get to experience. So I'm giving this one a very mild recommendation for the curious, especially if you're a fan of this director, which I happen to be.
Okay. All right, Eric, what'd you think?
Well, I saw this at the Toronto Film Festival last year, and I think I might have mentioned it briefly. But this is a movie that I actually kind of wholeheartedly reject purely on the basis of being a taxpayer. Because just I could not get out of my head watching this movie the idea that, a half dozen, eight or ten criminals are put on this gigantic spacecraft and thrust into space as an opportunity to, find this alternative energy source. None of it made any sense to me on that kind of logistical level. And then watching, the behavior of the movie, it was almost like, Denis was kind of making a really ugly, art house version of a Cinemax movie at times. This is a movie that is constantly, in your face about sex and masturbation and, rape, and there's a lot of really ugly stuff going on in this movie. And, the kind of stuff you might expect in a prison movie, basically. And I'm sure, there are people, looking at this movie in different ways. I know that there are a lot of people that do respect this director and, find that she's actually hitting on something here, at least through a first viewing. I certainly did not get there, watching the characters' behaviors, her attempts at
trying to make us fill in the blanks ourselves are not particularly successful. The structure of the movie is kind of, you know, goes between the future and the present and the past and everything, and it just did not engage me on on that kind of level. But maybe I need to look at it a second time, not as a taxpayer, and just kind of go with the flow as I do several other films. But on first viewing, I did not make any kind of attachment emotionally or intellectually to the story.
Okay. All right. That is High Life, which is only playing in three theaters. It's at the Music Box, and it's at River East and in Evanston. So there you go. All right. Eric, why don't you tell us about the latest version of Hellboy?
Yeah, well, this is the third attempt now to bring Hellboy, Mike Mignola's comic book character, to the big screen. Guillermo del Toro did it previously in 2004, before the Marvel Cinematic Universe actually occurred, then had a sequel in 2008. This time it's a third studio now handling the reins of Hellboy. Lionsgate is directed by Neil Marshall of The Descent, and has done some Game of Thrones episodes and some other lesser movies as well. And the star of the movie is David Harbour from Stranger Things. In the story, Hellboy, it kind of, gives us, it's really kind of very much a reboot, because it gives us, in flashback, the origin story of Hellboy, once again, the way Del Toro led off his 2004 film. And Hellboy is sort of tasked with a couple different missions he gets put on, one involving sort of a kind of a crusade like group that are trying to quash giants that are out in the wilderness causing havoc, and as well as an old witch played by Mia Jovovich, who was vivisected many years ago, cut into pieces, thrown across the land in different boxes, and is currently being dug up and is seeking revenge to unleash an unholy plague on everyone in the world.
Hang on, Eric. Okay. Let's take a break, okay?
Okay.
All right, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll find out what Eric thought of Hellboy. I'll tell you what I thought of it, too. So, Eric and Jim, hang on, guys. We'll take a quick break, and when we come back, a couple of reviews of Hellboy right after this on 720 WGN.
Precious, flat tires, road debris, and express lanes that are anything but express. Getting to work every day is a new adventure. Keep your travel times lower with WGN Traffic on Steve Cochran Show, weekday mornings on 720 WGN.
All right, we're going to continue with the movie reviews coming up right after the news. We got a couple more movies to talk about, and we have the box office figures to talk about over the weekend. And that's all coming up, so stay tuned. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here on a Monday morning. My dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's Monday morning. It's a jokey time. We're doing the movie reviews right now. We are also going to be talking about some minor events that actually changed pop culture in the world forever. And some we'll reminisce about some live-action Saturday morning TV shows. That's all coming up. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. And you can follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show and stay connected on our Facebook page at facebook.com/Nick D Show. All right. Every Monday morning, Eric Childress and Jim Laskowski review the movies with me. Eric, welcome back.
Thank you.
And Jim, welcome back.
Thank you.
Okay, so Eric, tell us what you thought of Hellboy. You told us the basic plot and all that stuff. So tell us what you thought.
Yeah. So, you know, Del Toro's Hellboy, I was never really a big fan of. I thought the first film, after I thought a pretty strong setup, actually just kind of devolved and got kind of boring. Del Toro seemed more interested in Doug Jones's Fishman character than he did Hellboy, frankly. And that's now that just seems like a 14-year-old setup for Shape of Water. I thought the sequel handled the tone of the piece a little bit better. There's a lot more special effects and a little more going on in that one, but it still didn't quite work for me. This one doesn't really work at all. There are parts of it that are actually incredibly boring, especially when Hellboy gets his new crew together, including Sasha Lane and Daniel Day-Kim. The partnership between the three of them is just, there's nothing there. There's no energy. There's nothing interesting about those characters. David Harbour's doing best he can with Hellboy. I don't think it's his fault. I think he's kind of saddled with a lot of really bad, lame jokes, screenplay that just kind of all over the place. The movie kind of lost me after the first act for a bit, after it kind of sets itself up with this sort of this giant thing that then kind of feels like an aside to eventually get to the Mia Jovovich stuff. And this is an R-rated film. I mean, this is the vision of the Mike Mignola comic book that Del Toro's film didn't have. Those films were PG-13 and were a bit more family-friendly. This one is not shy about the gore factor, and normally that is something that can certainly wake me up out of any situation. But here it just seems perfunctory. It doesn't feel like there's really any purpose for it other than to say, like, hey, we're finally doing the R-rated Hellboy. We're just going to gore this thing up at every possible turn. And it's just not that interesting. The violence isn't that interesting. The action scenes are not particularly well done. The giant scene isn't too bad. There's a lot going on in this movie that's about 2 hours long, but it just doesn't, none of it feels justified at all. And it seems like this is a character that is going to go bye-bye for a while because audiences don't seem that interested in it. And three films in, I'm certainly not that interested in it. And it's really a shame, too, because the groundwork for a story around this character seems to be there. Del Toro tackled it, I think, a little bit. It's been so long since I've seen those movies. But the idea of the hero that really should be a villain in his nature, there's something, you know, potentially really interesting in that, but this film, other than every once in a while talking it up a bit between him and his quote-unquote dad, played by Ian McShane, it just kind of shows up and then is just kind of quickly forgotten about so it can do some more gore and some special effects. And it's a shame because I think that there could be something interesting about Hellboy, but again, three films in, you haven't gotten me involved. I don't know if you're ever going to.
Yeah, I'm with you on this, Eric. I wasn't a big fan of the Del Toro. I think the second one, like you said, I think the second one is better than the first one.
Mm-hmm.
But the first one had my favorite stuff, which was the origin stuff, because I liked the little Hellboy.
The setup of the original Hellboy, yeah. I'm like this could be like,
yeah.
At the time, we're gonna remember, this is 2004. This is 4 years before Iron Man.
Right.
So I'm just like, this could be like one of the really cool comic book adaptations we've had, and it just, after that, it didn't do anything for me.
Yeah. No, I just like baby Hellboy. That's the...
Yeah.
this one, it's more the same. I guess I just don't care about the character. And I know, you know, like you said, David Harbour is, he's saddled with some really stupid jokes in this movie, and, you know, the dialogue is not that great. To me, the character itself, I don't find him all that interesting. I don't find him compelling. I don't really care. And putting the team together, like you said, that never comes together. Does Mila Jovovich, does she age? She looks,
no.
My God, what kind of diet, what is she doing to her skin? She looks like she's still 17 years old.
Apparently, whatever Paul Rudd's eating too.
Yeah, man. Yeah, it's crazy. But I mean, you know, some of the special effects are pretty cool here. And again, it is really, as you mentioned, it is really gory, and that might, you know, take some people by surprise who have seen, you know, the first two. But I think this is, and I'm a big fan of this director, as you know. I'm a real big fan of Neil Marshall, but he seems to just be going through the paces here. There's not a whole lot going on, at all here. So again, another relatively uninteresting version of this character that I've never read. That, now, to be fair, I've never read the comics. You know, my only exposure to this character are the two Del Toro movies and this one. And I, like you, Eric, I don't find it, there was nothing compelling about it. It didn't capture my imagination. And like you said, there's sections of this movie that are really boring. And I just didn't care about the character or what was going on. So it's a disappointment on all levels, especially considering how much I like Neil Marshall.
I think Neil Marshall made The Descent, and he's, I don't know. That's the only movie of his I've ever responded to.
Okay, Doomsday Rules. So, all right, well, now we're saying no to Hellboy. All right.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, all right. By the way, none of us saw Little. The movie where the...
What? Well, in fairness, we have. It's just we didn't see this one.
Right. Right. Yeah, you're right. It's absolutely true. Okay, all right, so now, Eric, did you not see Missing Link?
I have not seen it yet, no.
Oh, man. All right.
Yeah.
Jim, tell
us. I saw After.
You saw After. Nice choice.
Thank you.
All right. hey, somebody had to take the bullet.
Yeah.
Jim, tell us about Missing Link.
Happy to. Yeah, this is courtesy of the great team at Leica Studios. And this one is directed by Chris Butler, who previously helmed the delightful Paranorman, and also co-wrote The Incredible Kubo and the Two Strings. So this one is set in the Victorian era, and we start with Sir Lionel Frost, voiced by Hugh Jackman. And he's a British explorer/adventurer who wants to be accepted by a London club, we'll say, of so-called great men. And it's unfortunate that they treat his beliefs in myths like the Loch Ness Monster as nonsense. And this in turn makes him, you know, makes Frost want to prove himself all the more at the expense of alienating everyone around him. But he's got the passion to, explore and uncover a new life out there. So he's inspired by a letter that he receives to discover the legend of the mysterious Sasquatch in the Pacific Northwest. Frost believes that proof of Bigfoot will prove the theory of evolution and perhaps more importantly, finally grant him access to the elite social club that he wants to be part of. The president of this club is one Lord Pigott Dunsby, voiced by Stephen Fry, who, like I mentioned, resents Frost and his theories and decides to send a man to tail Frost named Stink, voiced by Timothy Oliphant. And they, essentially want to foil the Sasquatch search, thus kind of negating all the things that Frost believes. I don't want him to succeed for some reason. But to Frost's surprise, once he arrives in the Pacific Northwest, not only does he quickly find the Sasquatch, he discovers that it was the mythic beast who actually wrote the letter of invitation. And this lovable, talkative beast is eventually named Mr. Link, voiced by Zach Galifianakis. And he happens to write and speak English fluently and seems to be pretty amicable for the most part. But he is also very lonely and believes Frost can help him find a community of close cousins in a remote area of the Himalayas called Shangri-La. So the two sort of quickly strike a deal. As long as Mr. Link gives Frost evidence of his existence, the explorer will help him find Shangri-La. And so then most of the story from there follows this kind of odd couple's world-hopping journey, which features a dangerous sea voyage at one point and the addition of a third teammate named Adelina, voiced by Zoe Saldana. who happens to also be Frost's former love interest. So as a team, will they be able to complete the mission?
Okay. Jim, hang on.
Okay.
We're going to take a break, and we'll come back, and we'll find out what Jim thought of Missing Link. I'll tell you what I thought of Missing Link as well. That's all coming up right here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Skyline studio, here until 5 a.m. My dad's going to call in and tell a joke, because it's Monday morning and it's a jokey-jokey time, and we're talking about the new movies. Before the break, Jim Leskowski told us the latest from Leica Studios is called Missing Link, and we heard all about that. Eric, welcome back.
Thank you.
And Jim, welcome back.
Thank you.
All right, Jim, go ahead. Continue. Missing Link.
Well, you know, as I mentioned at the beginning of my review here, I mentioned two titles, Paranorman and Kubo and the Two Strings. And as far as I'm concerned, that is like top-tier stop-motion animation, like among some of the best animated films I've seen, you know, in the past 10 years or so. And I've gone back to those movies, enjoyed them time and time again. So I had very high expectations going into this, and you know, I found this to be a very pleasant piece of escapist entertainment, much like the past efforts from, you know, this team of very, very talented creators here. The craft of, you know, this very charming, family-friendly story that is ultimately about friendship. But at the same time, as you're watching this, your jaw is on the floor because of how they raised the bar with this technical precision, you know, with this animation. It's just sublime. It's beautiful. There's great attention to detail and incredibly well-executed action sequences. And a lot of very funny and memorable interactions, especially once they reach the Himalayas. There's a particular scene of introduction involving a chicken that cracked me up. And, you know, that being said, I this did feel more along the lines of a Pixar adventure, maybe with a touch of Wallace and Gromit, thus kind of not making it as original, I think, as the other films from the studio. And, you know, a few of the jokes don't land, but, you know, I can't deny that this movie has a lot of heart and a great friendship that develops between Frost and Link. It's very easy to latch on to and enjoy. The audience I saw this with was laughing, but I will say, and of course when you talk about the box office, the audience was a lot smaller than I would have liked, because I want the studio to be successful and to keep making great animated films, because they deserve to. They deserve bigger numbers, because obviously so much hard work goes into these movies, and it shows on screen. You kind of watch Missing Link and kind of just get lost in, you know, how beautiful it is. And you get caught up in the world that they get to go to, and there's a lot of different varying worlds. And Zach Galifianakis, of course, does wonderful work as Link. And it's just a kind of a really great buddy comedy that, you know, is very humane and has some clever dialogue. And in the end, kind of even says something about the crimes of colonialism and old world conservatism in the end, to just kind of hit the nail on the coffin there. But I wouldn't necessarily put it as high up as Kubo and the Two Strings or Paranorman or Coraline, but I 100% support this kind of inventive animation this team continues to put out. They're 5 for 5, and I definitely highly recommend that that families take their kids to see Missing Link, since I'm positive you will have a great time.
Yeah, I loved it. I thought it was brilliant. I thought it was hilarious. I thought it had a lot of heart. And again, the animation that these guys do, It's breathtaking. It's absolutely mind-bogglingly beautiful. And every frame, there was a moment in the movie where I was just watching it and I just started to tear up because it was just so beautiful. Not because of like emotions that were happening in the movie, but just because I was sitting in this theater watching this unbelievably beautiful looking film. And the amount of work that goes into this, I mean, the amount of work that goes into doing this, and it's a special studio. It's a really, really special studio, and they're making, as far as I'm concerned, they're making the best animated movies currently. And I adore this movie. I thought the relationships were funny. I thought the voice work was fantastic. Zach Galifianakis is great, and so is Hugh Jackman. And Timothy Oliphant is having a blast here. And Emma Thompson is great as the elder spokesman that shows up later in the movie. You know, it's funny and it moves along beautifully. And again, just the visual splendor that you get from watching these movies from Laika is just, it's jaw dropping. It's so beautiful. And the climactic action sequence is incredibly exciting and really, really tense and beautifully done, beautifully edited and done so well. It builds up to such a really, really, really exciting climax. I thought, you know, all the relationships worked out really nicely. It's a sweet movie and it's got a very nice message. They leave it open-ended for another adventure, which I would love to see, but you know, it only made $5.8 million over the weekend. So I don't know if that's gonna happen or not. But it's certainly left open, you know, for the possibility of these characters to come back, and I would love to see that. But this is top notch stuff all the way around. I mean, this is it's just beautiful, and I could just say, you know, that Laika continues to make these just astonishing pieces of work, and this one's right up there with all the other great stuff that they've done, and they haven't made a non-great movie yet. And I loved it. I think it's great, and I wish more people would see it. I really wish. I'm so disappointed in the numbers here, man, because this is just a special movie from a very, very special studio, and it's just gorgeous, beautiful stuff. So, all right. So next week we've got Her Smell, which is basically all all I care about for next week, and then we've got that La Loca La Luna movie with the girl coming out and drowning people and stuff.
Yeah.
All right. So we
the curse.
Okay, it's a curse. All right. Well, we got that coming out too. But basically, we just got the Elizabeth Moss show. Next week. So we'll get into that. All right, Jim. Thanks, buddy. We'll talk to you next week.
Okay. Sounds
all right,
good.
Take care. Yeah. There you go. All right, Eric. Let's do some box office here.
Yeah.
I can't tell you how disappointed I am that nobody went to go see Missing Link, man.
Yeah, and you know, since you brought it up, I mean, the idea, you know, this is Laika was being handled by Focus Features, which is already, you know, slightly a bit of a handicap because they're an independent, Universal has control of them, but they're Universal or an independent arm, and you know, four of their 12 highest grossing movies are Laika films, but each one has grossed less since Coraline has grossed less than the last one, which is already on a downward trend. So Missing Link ends up going over to Annapurna, which, you know, I mean, they're doing some nice things at Annapurna, and I'm glad they exist, but they're not good at marketing their movies. And when I saw that they were handling this one, I knew it was in trouble.
Yeah,
I didn't see a great deal of ads for Missing Link. I completely, honestly forgot it was a Laika movie until just a couple of weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
The way that they were marketing the film, it was barely inspiring me, and I'm a fan.
Yeah.
And for this thing to open with $5.8 million, Annapurna teamed up with MGM and Orion. Well, there's a trifecta.
Yeah.
To do this new United Artists Releasing Company, which is what this was under this banner for, And yeah, they're going to have stuff like the Child's Play remake and the Dirty Rotten Scoundrels remake, and you know, eventually all leading up to the next James Bond movie. But you know, if this is the way that they're going to handle an animated film, which I mean, that's a Smallfoot made $83 million.
Oh man,
last September. I mean, and that's just a throwaway Warner Brothers film. It made $83 million, which is more than any Leica film has ever made.
Yeah. That's crazy.
You know, so it's sad all around, and you know, Annapurna, United Artists, whatever you're calling yourselves, you gotta figure this out, because you got things coming out that are gonna need the push, and you got some potential hits on your hand, and if you don't do it right, you're not gonna last very long.
All right, let's fly through the numbers real quick. Number one was Shazam with $25 million, $94 million total. That's doing very well.
Yeah, dropped a little bit more than I thought it was going to, but it's still headed for, around the $150 million range.
Number two, Little, $15.4 million. Number three, Hellboy with $12 million. Pet Cemetery, Dumbo, The Best of Enemies, Captain Marvel, back still in the top 10. And then After with 6.2, and Missing Link, really disappointing with 5.8.
Yeah.
So, what's going to be? Is that the Curse of La Luna going to be is that going to be number one next week?
Yeah, I think that's going to end up taking the number one slot. Shazam is probably going to drop probably in the teens somewhere. The reviews that actually played late at South by Southwest after I left.
Yeah.
The response was not particularly good to it, and they're not screening it for critics.
That's not a good sign. Not a good sign.
Yeah, so not a good sign. So I don't think it's going to have one of those like really good horror openings like Pet Cemetery had.
Right.
But it might just be enough to kind of just knock Shazam out.
Right. Okay. Well, we'll find out next week, and then I don't care about that because Elizabeth Moss has a movie coming out next week.
Okay.
That's all I care about.
That's right.
Okay. All right, Eric. Thanks, man.
Sure thing.
We'll talk to you next week. Eric Childress, Jim Laskowski will join me again next week to talk about the new movies. We'll take a break here on 720 WGN. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m., and it is Monday morning. That means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. And 312-981-7200 is the phone number. And to Tom, my producer Tom Hush, went home sick. So we have Sammy sitting in. Sammy, why don't you say hello to everybody?
Hello. It's me in the inside looking in.
Yeah.
I was always looking out. Now I'm looking in, and glad to be here.
I'm glad you're here, man. Thanks. Thanks for helping out, and pulling a long shift this morning. We appreciate that. So there you go. All right, we're going to be talking about these. I got these 15 minor events that changed pop culture and the world. And if you want to jump in at any time, it's 312-981-7200. For talk or text, and 312-981-7200. This is a pretty interesting. This was from cracked.com, which is one of my favorite pop culture websites. And it's weird because for those people who remember back in the day, Cracked was kind of a knockoff, a knockoff of Mad Magazine. It wasn't as funny, and it just wasn't very. It wasn't very good. It was sort of like if you had Cracked, you were reading Cracked because you had already finished reading your Mad Magazine. That's basically the only time you would read Cracked. It was like, oh, let's read Cracked. But they've gone on to change their website. Still has the same name. It's Cracked, and it's still got the same logo as the magazine, but it's a completely different website than you would expect. So don't be thrown by that, because they have a lot of really good writers and some really fun stuff. But this is really fascinating stuff here about how 15 minor events changed pop culture in the world. And here's the intro that they have to this. You doubtless know about the butterfly effect, where a single tiny incident will affect the world in huge, unexpected ways. Well, that same concept applies to entertainment. Sometimes all it takes is a minor, seemingly meaningless event to set the wheels in motion for a pop culture giant. The entire universe of entertainment, movies, TV, books, games, music, etc., is littered with examples of tiny decisions that had huge consequences. So think about this, because some of the stuff here is pretty great. Like, here's the first one that they talk about. The studio behind the Emoji movie called up Jordan Peele's manager to offer the comedic actor the role of the poop emoji. Jordan Peele was so disgusted by the offer, he decided to quit acting and move on to directing movies. So we ended up with Get Out and Us because he was so upset that he was offered the poop emoji in the Emoji movie. Who ended up playing the poop emoji? I don't even remember. So, but yeah, Jordan Peele turning out. I mean, what a couple of years that guy's had, man. You know, between Get Out and Us, and now, you know, rebooting the Twilight Zone. It's getting great reviews, but it's all because he was offered the poop emoji in the Emoji movie. How about this one? In 1974, Johnny Carson asked NBC to stop broadcasting reruns of The Tonight Show on the weekends. So to fill that 90-minute gap on Saturday nights, NBC came up with a new variety show called Saturday Night Live. So that was Johnny Carson. You know, he didn't want the reruns being shown anymore because they used to show the Tonight Show reruns on Saturday nights. And so that's how Saturday Night Live began back in 1975. God, was it bad this past weekend. Sammy, do you watch that? Do you watch SNL?
I tune in sometimes, not a regular contributor, but when I get a time, I do. But the guy that did play the poo emoji was Sir Patrick Stewart.
Oh, you're kidding me.
I am not kidding you.
Wow, Patrick Stewart. I guess I had forgotten all about that. All right, well, it didn't discuss Sir Patrick Stewart.
It did not, but
it disgusted Jordan Peele.
You ask me to do that, no shot.
Yeah, yeah. Let's see. Yeah, that's pretty cool that Saturday Night Live was created because Johnny Carson didn't want NBC showing reruns anymore. So they just they did Saturday Night Live, and it's been on now since 1975. And you know, and I love Emma Stone. I think she's great. And it wasn't her fault that it was an absolutely horrible episode of SNL this weekend. It was so bad. Man.
Yeah, the whole Scottsdale stuff, I didn't contribute to that. So, no. Saturday Night Live, you know, for me, it's a hit or miss.
A lot of people. I've been watching it since. I've never missed. This is an absolutely true. I've never missed an episode of SNL. And I'm talking since 1975. I have not missed an episode of SNL.
Do you remember all the episodes, though?
I remember a lot of them, yeah. Yeah? Yeah. No, I'm a huge SNL fan, like ridiculous, like stupid SNL fan. You know, people are always talking about, you know, I get so tired of the people who are like, that show hasn't been funny in years. It's consistently the same. Like you just said, it's hit or miss. I mean, people go back and go, it's not been funny since, you know, like the first season with Gilda Radner and John Belushi. And like, no, you go back and watch those episodes. There are some stinkers in there.
If you find a good episode, I mean, if it's funny, it is funny. I mean, it's off the charts. So, like I said, but for me, it fluctuates. And overall, not too happy about the current episode. But
well, the episode Saturday night was terrible. I mean, it was terrible. And I am the staunchest SNL supporter in the world. And it was terrible. I think there were like maybe two sketches that were kind of funny. And then everything else was just, it was a nightmare. And you have a great, you know, you have a great host like Emma Stone. And they didn't write anything for her that was even remotely good. So, all right, let's see. Here are some other, we're talking about minor events that changed the shape of pop culture. Sony and Nintendo were collaborating on a CD-based game console in 1988, but there were conflicts, so the companies parted ways, and Nintendo partnered with Philips to develop the Super NES CD-ROM, which was never released. Sony, now alone, made its own console, the PlayStation.
Big PlayStation fan. I gotta love the PlayStation.
Do you?
Oh, absolutely. That thing's got everything.
The company continues to develop best-selling consoles with PlayStation 2, 3, 4, and counting. So, Sony and Nintendo broke apart, and then Nintendo took it. Yeah, I'm not a gamer at all. You know, like at all. I don't have any system or any of that stuff.
You never played video games growing up?
I played, you know, because I grew up during the heyday. You know, I mean, I was a teenager when Pac-Man hit in the 80s. I was in high school, but I played video games.
Frogger?
The only game I liked Frogger. Frogger was fun. Like George Costanza, it's his favorite game.
There you go.
No, Galaga was my game.
Interesting.
Yeah, Galaga was my game, and I was really good at it. I was really, really good at Galaga. That was the only one that I really sort of obsessively played. I also like Miss Pac-Man. I think Miss Pac-Man is better than Pac-Man.
Never go wrong with Pac-Man.
Yeah, I like Miss Pac-Man more than Pac-Man. But Galaga was the game. That was the one that that's the one that I spent the most quarters on. Let's just say that. How about this? Another moment that changed pop culture. Robert Downey Jr. ad-libbed the line, "I am Iron Man," effectively removing the having a secret identity part from the MCU world, which in turn changed how all the comic book adaptations would be done since. And he improvised that line.
I did not know that.
Yeah. I'd read that before, but I didn't, you know, but that's a big thing right there.
You a big fan of Iron Man? Because that's my favorite.
I like all three of the Iron Man movies. I think they're all good. I know people don't like the second one. I like the second one. I think the second one is good.
I think his humor, Robert Downey, the way he plays the character. Excellent. You found the best person to play the best role. He does a fantastic job. Iron Man, great.
And got a big Avengers movie coming out next week, 2 weeks.
Indeed.
And I already got my tickets. And man, I'm not even going because you know a lot of people are going on the big Thursday night, and it was impossible to get tickets. And I was reading stories where people were selling tickets online for $15,000 or something which is ridiculous. But I'm going on a Saturday afternoon, and I got my tickets a week ago, and it was already like it was like a Saturday afternoon, like 2:30 in the afternoon or something. We're going to see it.
See, the thing about me is I can see a movie anytime, but when I go to see a movie, I got to have a nice big plate of nachos. Wow. I mean, that's what comes with me at the movies.
Yeah.
So.
All right. You got to have the nachos.
Nachos, maybe nachos. A little popcorn.
Yeah. That's a lot of money, man.
It is.
They make a lot of money on the concessions at the.
Hey, they make good money off me, but that's how I enjoy a nice sit back movie.
Well,
so.
You better, you know, you're going to have a, when you go see Avengers, you're going to have a large plate of nachos. The movie's 3 hours long.
Sit back and relax.
Yeah, 3 hours, everybody. Tuck yourself in. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about how other these minor moments changed some pop culture. If you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Okay, more after this. All right. Hey, everybody, welcome back. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, and coming up, the great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. Also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. All of that and more. We're talking about some minor events that actually changed the course of pop culture. And if they never would have happened, some of this stuff never would have come to be. The studio offering the poop emoji part to Jordan Peele inspired him to stop acting and just direct movies. Johnny Carson didn't want reruns of his show to be shown anymore on the weekends. Thus, the birth of Saturday Night Live happened. Sony and Nintendo couldn't come up with their idea together, so they went out on their own. PlayStation was born. And Robert Downey Jr. ad-libbed the line, "I am Iron Man," removing the having a secret identity part from the Marvel Cinematic Universe. So those are the ones that we've gotten so far. And if you would like to jump in, 312-981-7200 for talk and text. We do have a text here from Glenn, who says, "Back to the Future was originally filmed with Eric Stoltz as Marty McFly. But since Michael J. Fox was funnier, they reshot the scenes with him." Well, it's a little more complicated than that. Zemeckis originally wanted Michael J. Fox, but he couldn't get out of his contract with Family Ties. His scheduling, they wouldn't move the schedule around so that he could make the movie. So Zemeckis cast Eric Stoltz, and then it just wasn't working. It just was not working as they were shooting the movie. It was very, very clear that Stoltz was not playing it the way that Zemeckis wanted. And, Zemeckis has gone on record as saying it was the hardest thing he ever had to do was firing Eric Stoltz, because they were pretty much into the filming. And if you've ever seen the footage of Eric Stoltz, the way he played Marty McFly, completely different than what Michael J. Fox did. Like, it's a real sullen kind of a performance. And it just wasn't working for Zemeckis, so he had fired him. And it just so happened that Michael J. Fox's schedule did open up, and he was able to take the role. And of course, you know, nobody but Michael J. Fox will ever be Marty McFly. But it's really weird to watch that footage, the Eric Stoltz footage. You can see it on the Blu-ray, special edition of the Blu-ray, where they have some of the Eric Stoltz footage that you can see, and it's really strange to watch. Well, first of all, it's strange because you can't really picture anybody but Michael J. Fox playing that role. It's just weird to see Eric Stoltz in the costume, you know, and saying the lines and stuff. It's just very strange. And also the style of Stoltz's performance was pretty completely different, actually. So yeah, but that's another big one right there. Could have been Eric Stoltz. And again, Steve says that the Sony Betamax VCR changed the course of it. Yeah, you know, the thing about that was, it's interesting that back in the video cassette days, Beta was the superior format. The quality was better, the picture was better, the sound was better, but it just did not take off. But like historically, if you go back, Beta is the better format of the two, but VHS is the one that took off. All right, how about this one? Mars unwittingly helped popularize Reese's Pieces. E.T.'s favorite candy was originally supposed to be M&M's, but Mars declined permission for them to be featured in the film. However, Hershey agreed to pay a promotional fee of $1 million to feature their brand new product, Reese's Pieces, which eventually led to their explosion in popularity upon the film's release. Absolutely true story. And I'll tell you what, the person who said no to using the M&Ms in the movie, fired. That would be my guess. That person's job, gone. Wait a minute, you said no to Steven Spielberg? You said no. You're the person who said no, M&Ms cannot be used in E.T. Reese's Pieces, that's what happened. That's an absolutely true story. And I don't even know the guy, the person, whoever was the person who was responsible for that decision. Oh, man. How about this is I you know what? I actually did hear this story, and I couldn't believe it was true, but this is actually a true story. And this goes to show you that watching TV is a beautiful thing sometimes. A man may have saved a woman's life after learning CPR from The Office. When Cross Scott found a woman in a car who wasn't conscious or breathing, he remembered the episode of The Office where Michael Scott learned CPR. He sang Stayin' Alive to himself as he did his chest compressions, which woke the woman up and got her breathing again.
Who would have knew? Michael Scott.
I love that story. I love that story. Guys, he saved a woman's life because he learned CPR from The Office. And by the way, that is a hilarious episode, too. That is an absolutely hilarious, really hilarious episode.
I like how they share last names. You got Michael Scott, yeah, and then Cross Scott.
Yeah, the guy's last name is Scott. Yeah,
yep.
That's very funny. They're not related. No relation.
To what we know.
Yeah. Could be. Some sort of mystery in there. But it's funny because I remember when The Office first came on, because I was a really big fan of the original British Office with Ricky Gervais. And I was very skeptical about the American version. I was like, man, because the British version of The Office is brilliant, and so I was really skeptical. And then, you know, so the pilot episode of the American version came on, and it's almost exactly the same as the British version, like almost word for word. And I was like, oh, man.
So is that where I draw the line that I don't know? Because I've never seen the British version.
Oh, it's so good, man. It's so good. It's different.
Sammy's got to go do his homework now.
And it's only, yeah, but it's only, here's the thing about that. In they got it, the Office in America, the American version of The Office was on for like, what was it, 11 seasons or something. There were only two seasons and of the British version. 13 episodes total with the Christmas special. That's it. That's it. You're in, you're out. I watched both seasons in one day. So a buddy of mine had them on DVD, and I watched both. I watched all, you know, because there's only 12 episodes, and then the Christmas special came later. But I watched all of the episodes of the, I got it all done in one day. Eventually, the American version changed course and was great. I mean, it was great. By about the third or fourth season, it's not just the entire cast was so funny. Like, everybody on that show was so funny. So, anyway. But you got to see the British version, man. It's really good. All right, let's take a break here. And then we got to get the news coming up right after this. Right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. We're here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, and Steve Cochran has your morning drive at 6. It's Monday, so that means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey, jokey, jokey time. And I think he's pushing... I think my dad is up to... Oh, I think my dad's close to... If you believe this or not, Vic, I think my dad's coming up on 250 jokes that he's told.
You know what my first question I want to ask, although it's probably... That's like a peek behind the curtains. I want to say, where does he get them all? But I don't think he'll tell that.
Well, I mean, I can tell you that he's got... You know, first of all, he's been telling jokes. Seriously, he's been telling jokes... It for my entire life.
Yeah, it's part of his personality. I met him.
Yeah.
The first time I met him, he told me two jokes within 30 seconds. Yeah,
of course he did. Did he do the whole routine? Did he pull out the...
Oh, yeah, it was a routine. The wallet.
The wallet with the my ex, a picture of my ex, and it's got an X on it, and his driver's license with Larry Fine. He has a whole...
But he really got me, because I didn't know that was his personality. Yeah. You know, it crept up on me, and he got me. You got me.
Yeah,
it was at one of your screenings. Yeah,
one of the film screenings. Yeah, one of my film screenings. But he's got, you know, and I get him joke books and stuff too. You know, and then he'll go through the joke books and he'll read some of them, and then he'll go, I know that one. I knew that one, he'll go through the joke book. I've got him like a pretty good couple of stacks of joke books.
It's a talent, because I'll tell you, my dad. I don't remember him ever telling a single joke in my presence, and if he would have, he probably would have messed it up.
Well, that's the thing, you know, and then there are those things, and now it's a whole subgenre is, you know, dad jokes. That's like a whole subgenre of jokes now. Oh, that's a dad joke. And it's, you know, because there is a, you know, sort of a specific style of joke that dads like to tell.
Yeah.
And sometimes they screw them up.
And let's be honest, and I'm a dad, so I can say this, we're kind of the butt of so many jokes anyway. So.
Absolutely. But anyway, I think he's approaching 250. I think he's close to 250 jokes.
Good for him.
That he's told. So it's been a long-running segment here on the show over the years. So, all right. Well, that's my dad. He'll be calling in a little bit later on to tell that joke. Right now, though, we're talking about some minor events that actually changed the course of pop culture in the world. Like, changed things in the world of pop culture and stuff. Like, a guy saved a woman's life because he learned CPR from an episode of The Office. That's just one of the things that makes you think, hey, it's pretty educational to even watch a sitcom. You could learn something and save somebody's life. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Here's Ike on WGN. Go ahead, Ike. Ike, are you there? Okay. All right. Let's I know. We'll have to see if Ike is there. But all right, I couldn't hear him. All right. Anyway, we're talking about things that that changed the road of pop culture here. Minor things, like how about this one: Buddy Holly, Richie Valens, and JP the Big Bopper Richardson had been touring by bus, but made a last minute decision to charter a flight because they were tired and running out of clean clothes. And then the plane crash, known as the day the music died, spawned a new police policy because of this. It's such a sad story, obviously. Because Buddy Holly's pregnant wife heard the news on TV, and she suffered a miscarriage the following day, which prompted the authorities to implement a policy about not releasing victims' names to the public pending notification of their families. So it was that incident, it was that tragedy that now, you know, they're not releasing names. Did you know that, Vic? That it was that?
No. I did not know that.
I didn't know that at all. Because Buddy Holly's pregnant wife heard the news just on TV. Could you imagine that? Hearing the news on TV?
No.
And then she suffered a miscarriage. So that's why they're not releasing victims' names now.
It's horrible.
Until the notification of their family. Such a tragedy, too. That whole story is just so sad. All right, how about this one? In 1989, a Michigan housewife tried to make Fox cancel a show because she was offended by a particular episode. The controversy led to more interest in the series and a boost in the ratings, which the network desperately needed. The show would run for another 8 seasons. It was on Fox. Can you take a guess at what show it might be? Vic, what do you want to take a guess?
Tell me again.
Okay, in 1989, a Michigan housewife tried to make Fox cancel a show because she was offended by a particular episode, but that controversy led to more interest in the series and it boosted the ratings. It went on for another 8 seasons of Fox show.
1989. Well, now I have to say, in 1990, the Air Force sent me out of the country, and I didn't come back for like 7 years. So I'm probably a bad one to guess at this. I'm curious.
Married with Children.
Okay.
Which was a very controversial show when it first aired.
Was it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was very controversial. And
yeah, there's this whole blackout period of almost a decade where I missed everything.
You missed everything.
I came back and Rachel Ray was a huge star, and I had no idea who she was. I'm serious. And that's just the tip of the iceberg, man. And then I was like, at that point, I was like, nah, that decade's just gone. I'm not going to go back and try to learn everything.
So I love that that's the gauge. You came back and Rachel Ray was a superstar and you had no idea who she was.
It is the gauge because I remember sitting there going, who is this?
Yeah. I wish I didn't know who it was. She makes me nuts, Rachel Ray. Oh, makes me nuts. All right, let's see if we got some phone workings here. Here's Ike on WGN. Hey, Ike.
Hey, Nick. How's it going with you?
All right, what's up?
Yeah, that was interesting about the whole Back to the Future story, but I'm not sure if you know this story. Beverly Hills Cop was originally supposed to be Cobra.
Well, I know that Stallone was supposed to be in that. That's what I know, yeah.
Yeah, he was his character. It was supposed to be a more serious action film. His name was supposed to be Axel Copretti instead of Axel Foley, but the studios were like, you know what, let's make it a more funny. So they got Eddie Murphy, the Beverly Hills Cop, and Stallone took those ideas and he used it for Cobra.
Oh.
And, of course, in the scene in Beverly Hills Cop 2 where Eddie Murphy's on the phone, he has a picture of Cobra on the wall. That's a very funny scene.
Oh, okay. All right. I didn't know that part. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right, Ike. Thanks, man.
No problem.
Take care.
See, that's interesting to me.
Yeah.
Does Cobra, that movie, should qualify as a kind of a, what do you...
Guilty pleasure?
Well, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I love that movie.
Do you really?
Yes. I wonder if there's a cult following. That's the term I'm looking for.
There is. They've got no
Yeah,
cult.
Okay,
Cobra,
then that
definitely.
Is my cult movie that I love.
Cobra definitely has a cult following.
I love that movie. Really, and I get how ridiculous it is, but I love it.
Yeah, no, that's funny that you like that. I just think that's endlessly amusing that you love that movie.
I
think that's fantastic.
I amuse myself at that one.
I remember seeing that movie at a critic screening, and
really?
just like going, just be like, What are we watching? What is this? You know, and but that was at the time when, I mean, that was at the time when, you know, Stallone was massive. I mean, that was 1987 when that movie came out, or 86 or something like that. And he was huge at that time. Like, you know, like everything that he released became popular. I mean, even that, you ever see the arm wrestling movie that he made, Vic?
Over the top.
Over the top.
Yep. That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. Over the top, man.
Whew. Yeah, I think I questioned my future plans and thought about becoming a rogue, you know, I'd have to become a cop first, and then
yeah, you'd have to
really also, looked up to Cobra. What was his name? Cabretti. That's yeah. Right, Cabretti.
He always had a match in his mouth.
Yep. Yeah, match.
Oh, I forgot
about that.
My favorite part of that movie, though, was his car was badass.
Yes, it was. I don't know what it was.
Yeah, I can't remember what kind of car it was, but I just remember going, hey, that's a pretty badass car right there.
Custom-built Mercury.
Yeah, it was custom-built Mercury.
It was so cool. It was really, really cool, man.
And then the bad guy in the thing had a pretty cool knife. I remember going, whoa, that's pretty cool. It had spikes on it.
Yep. And they were like in a cult or something. It was such a ridiculous movie.
It was.
And the guy who directed it is the late great George P. Cosmatos was his name. He also directed Rambo.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he directed Rambo First Blood Part 2. You know, the thing about the Rambo movies is how they increasingly got ridiculous, because First Blood is a legitimately good movie. Like, First Blood is really a good movie, and Stallone is great in it. Like, it's a serious movie. It's not ridiculous. It's a really, really good movie. If you go back and watch First Blood, the original First Blood, like, that's a seriously really good movie. And I love it. It's my favorite Stallone movie. It's my favorite Stallone performance is in the original First Blood.
What's your second?
That's got to be Rocky, you know?
Third? I'm waiting for my favorite one.
Oh, well, what is Cobra?
No. Copland.
Oh yeah,
I love him in that.
He's great in Copland. When was the last time you saw First Blood, Vic?
First Blood is a great movie. I do remember. It's been a long time though.
They're not hunting him; he's hunting you.
It's a real tragic, you know, because the original version of the movie, they kill him he kills himself. He dies. John Rambo dies.
Oh, really?
And I've seen the original cut. They re-released First Blood for one night only as a special Fathom event in the movie theaters. We went, it was about 10 years ago, and my ex and I and a couple of other people went, and they actually showed the original ending where he dies.
Really?
Yeah, and it's really sad. I mean, it's obviously tragic. Well, actually, what happens to that character is sad, you know? It's a movie about how war changes people. It's a movie about how
it may be like how to adjust back into
and it's also about how Vietnam veterans were treated, you know, when they came back. It's a really good, serious movie. I mean, it's like, you know, because when you think Stallone, you think Rambo, you think, oh, like he's blowing everybody up, and you know, and
yeah,
and you know, but that, like, First Blood was like a serious movie, and he's really good in it, and so is Richard Crenna. The scenes between him and Richard Crenna are really sort of, and the ending is heartbreaking.
I was just about to say that his delivery of that last part gave me chills when I first saw it. I remember being moved by it.
Absolutely, man. I mean, like, it's a legitimately terrific movie. So, all right, we got more things that the minor events that changed the course of pop culture and the world. Hearing about these funny behind-the-scenes stories about how these things happen. We got a few more here. Our phone number is 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200 for talk and text, and we'll come back with more after this. All right, we're back. Oh, yes. It's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 o'clock. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. So we've been talking about these minor events that actually changed the course of pop culture in the world. Some really fun and fascinating kind of things. Here's another one. Garfield is the cultural force it is because Charles Schulz told Jim Davis to make him stand up. Schultz took a drawing of the sitting cat, gave him human-like legs and feet. The change made the character pop in a way that led to a wild commercial success that the character is known for today. So that was Charles Schultz who told Jim Davis to make him stand up. And I'm looking at the, they have an original, I'm looking at this picture here, and they have an original drawing of Garfield with John, his owner. And he's not standing on his legs. He seems very upset, too. Because I guess there's no lasagna around. All right, how about this? The clothes make the man. New Line Cinema's planned Iron Man movie got delayed, and the rights to the character returned to Marvel. Without Iron Man, there would be no MCU, and we wouldn't live in an age in which everyone is trying to start a cinematic universe. And it was supposed to be out. The original New Line Cinema version of it was supposed to be out in 2006, but it didn't make it. And you know, because at that point, you know, the rights to all the Marvel characters were kind of all over the place. You know, in different studios, and different people had the rights. And then when Marvel got it back, they began their own Marvel universe.
It would have been an interesting perspective to see the way that would have been.
You made?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because a lot of these older, you know, movies, the comic book movies that had come out, it's interesting to see how different they are now. I mean, the whole, you know, like Iron Man's 10 years old. That movie is 10 years old, which is hard to believe that the Marvel Universe has been around for 10 years, and it's 22 movies deep now. And they're doing, you know, they're doing like a 59-hour marathon.
Is that on the TV, or are they doing that?
No, in the theater.
Yeah, so they...
It's a 59-hour marathon. They're showing all, leading up to the Avengers Endgame, they're showing all 22 movies. So you can actually go and sit there for 59 hours. It's back to back to back to back to back to back to back.
That's something I might have to buy into, because that's just like a moment, you know? You get to sit there, reflect, and, you
well,
know... Just...
that's a lot, man.
I know, that's a lot.
That's a lot.
It's over 2 days worth of movies.
It's crazy, man. It's nuts. But people are going to do it. There's no question about it. But people are really excited about this, Endgame. I am, too. I think I thought Infinity War was really terrific. I thought it was really, really good. All right, how about this? When the 1966 Batman TV show was announced, kids of many major stars wanted their parents to star in it. Because it was impossible for the show to accommodate all of them, they created the iconic wall-climbing gag to allow those stars to make cameos. So the wall-climbing, and they open up a window, and there's a celebrity. The picture that I'm looking at is when Sammy Davis Jr. opened up the... So that's the reason they did that, because the children of these huge celebrities so wanted them to be in it. My favorite of the, of course, this is, you know, if you guys are regular listeners to my show, you know what my favorite window wall climbing cameo is. It's Jerry Lewis. I mean, hilarious. All right, how about this one? In 1961, a film titled The Hustler, starring Paul Newman, hit the silver screen, which is a great, great movie. It successfully brought pool, which was considered a dying sport back prior to the film's release, back as a mainstream game. Which is really kind of interesting, considering the kind of world that movie is, what the kind of characters that populate that movie, because these are not the healthiest characters in the world. Most of them are alcoholics. It's a very dark movie. But yeah, it brought pool back.
I've never seen the movie, but the one thing it correlates is just like, you know how Tiger Woods just won his Masters?
Yeah.
You know, Tiger Woods made golf for who it is.
Yeah.
So this kind of like, you know, it kind of brings me back to that moment.
It's funny because, you know, it's a really dark movie. The Hustler's a very, very, very dark movie. It's not like the sequel, which was Color of Money. That Scorsese made with Tom Cruise and Paul Newman. That's a much lighter movie and it's more fun, and it's a little bit more goofy. But Ben, the Hustler is, man, it's a dark movie, man. There's a lot of drinking. There's a lot of really dark, screwed up people in that movie. But man, Jackie Gleason is good in it. Oh my God. And that guy can shoot pool, Jackie Gleason. That's why they had it, you know, the Honeymooners. There was like every, you know, I can't tell you the number of episodes that have pool in them in the Honeymooners. How about this one? The placement of the office in Scranton, PA turned the once struggling former coal city into a tourist attraction. The fandom has brought thousands of guests to the city, revitalizing its downtown, resulting in improvements in commerce and housing. And they do the convention there, too. So Scranton, look at this. The office, saving people's lives with CPR, and then revitalizing towns like Scranton. Okay, how about this one? The release of the film Finding Nemo had the opposite effect it vied for. Sales for Clownfish hit the roof, and there was so much demand that the Saving Nemo Conservation Fund was created.
That's unique right there.
Yeah. And then finally, initially, Superman only was able to leap tall buildings. But when animating the 1940s cartoon, the producers discovered that making him fly was a good way to avoid drawing extra frames. So this is the reason any self-respecting superhero can do the same. So basically, because of animation laziness, they made him fly. I like that. I like that. All right. Right. And welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. How's it going? We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. And, yeah, it is a Monday morning. That means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. And so there you go. All right. So right now, we are going to jump into some live-action Saturday morning shows that will make you feel nostalgic. There were a lot of live-action, Saturday morning shows when I was a kid, and most of them were weird. We had a lot of weird children's TV when I grew up in the 70s. There was a lot of pot smoking going on in offices where they created TV shows for kids. There's a lot of weird stuff happening. And so a lot of those are on here. What did you guys watch when you were growing up? 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. What are some of your favorites growing up? What do we got here? We got Donald. Hey, Donald.
Yep.
Go ahead, man.
Well, actually, I'm a holdover from the last thing I just wanted to say about Veronica Lake.
Okay.
She was known for her hair going over one eye, that hairdo,
right.
And it was very long and luxurious.
Right.
Well, the government during World War II, they had a lot of women workers. They were trying to imitate her. And so they would get the hair caught in machinery.
Oh, that's so right.
They persuaded her to cut her hair and it ruined her career. And but I guess it helped the war effort in terms of safety.
I totally remember that story. I thanks for reminding. I totally forgot that one.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's pretty tragic too.
That's a big one. Yeah. Okay, Donald. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks.
So, did you watch any Saturday morning TV shows when you were a kid?
I did not. At least what I can recall, I do not remember.
Yeah. Because we had. I mean, it's not that big a deal now. But because there's like 50,000 channels and, you know, there's children's programming, you know, 24/7 and there's like 10 different kids networks. Now, back in the old days when I was growing up, you got three networks, man. You had ABC, you had CBS, you had NBC. Every Saturday morning, they would schedule you know, all the kids shows, and you would sit. What you get up at like 7 o'clock in the morning, and you'd sit in front of the TV and eat your cereal every Saturday morning until about 11, just watching cartoon shows or live action kid shows and stuff. And you look forward to every Saturday. You look forward to it, and that was a ritual when I was growing up. When I was a kid, it was just seriously sit in front of the TV from about 7 a.m. till about 11 a.m. In your pajamas. With your cereal, and just watching your favorite Saturday morning programs, and we're talking specifically about the live action Saturday morning shows, and that's where some of the weirdness came in when I was growing up. There's a lot of weird stuff on TV back then, but let's take a look back here. We've got a bunch of them here. How about Watch Mr. Wizard? Watch Mr. Wizard. Was on from 1951 to 1965. So that was before my time. I was born in 65. Science-based shows have carved out quite a little niche in Saturday morning programming over the years, and it all started with Watch Mr. Wizard. Don Hubert, the show's creator and host, was responsible for introducing young and curious audiences to the extraordinary world of science hiding out in our homes and backyards. The simple premise and efficient execution of it, Hubert explained scientific concepts to a rotating roster of neighborhood kids. It impacted more than just those millions watching the live broadcast. The series helped inspire and establish more than 5,000 science clubs, thanks to Mr. Wizard's popular brand of edutainment. So, yeah, that was a really inspirational thing. And it continues, you know, a lot of those hosts, a lot of that style of children's program is pretty popular. Obviously, we all know Bill Nye, the science guy, which, you know, obviously carries the torch that Mr. Wizard presented with. And I love Bill Nye. I think Bill Nye's great. Let's see. You guys want to jump in? 312-981-7200. If you want to talk about us reminiscing about these Saturday morning TV shows that you would watch. Here's Tom on WGN. Hey, Tom.
Oh, no, this is Patrick, Nick. How you doing?
Oh, how's it going?
Good. I was asking about Tom. I didn't know Tom was sick.
Oh, yeah, Tom's sick. He's at home.
I just woke up, so I didn't know.
He'll be back tomorrow.
All right, cool. I'll try to make sure to get up and listen.
All right.
I'm thinking of all the Sid and Marty Krofft stuff.
Oh, man.
Yeah, that stuff was insane. Sigmund and the Sea Monsters, Cuff and stuff. Land of the Lost was also, that was Sid and Marty Krofft.
That was Sid and Marty Krofft. They had a lot of
Lidsville.
Lidsville is one of the weirdest things that's ever been on TV.
Absolutely. And, you know, Charles Nelson Reilly just hamming it up in that one. You know, that was crazy. But I was thinking the original Ghostbusters.
The
Larry Storch. Spencer Tracy and a guy in a gorilla suit named Kong.
That's right.
Wow. That was on, I think that was on Channel 2. You know, going up there. And also, you know, Giggle Snort Hotel.
Yeah.
Other stuff like that. Yeah, that was just a ton of stuff. Just a ton of stuff, brother.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
All right, Patrick. Thanks, man.
All right. Take care.
All right, take care. There you go. He mentions the Sid and Marty Krofft stuff. That was just the weirdest, you know, if you're not familiar with, you know, like H.R. Puffin stuff, which is one of the weirdest things that's ever been on TV, and H.R. Puffin stuff was on 1969 and 1970, and I watched it when I was a kid. Even though it only lasted for one season, H.R. Puffin stuff made a considerable dent in pop culture with its unique and inventive use of full-sized puppets, a novel concept at that time. The popular kid show introduced wide-eyed children to the titular mayor of Living Island and its distinct residents. A young human boy, Jimmy, pulls a Gilligan's Island and gets shipwrecked with Puffin Stuff's crew. They try to help Jimmy escape the show's villain, a very zany witch, named Witchy Poo, by the way, who wants to add Jimmy's talking flute to her magical collection. Now, we're not making that up. That's what it was about. And if you just, like, Google image H.R. Puffin Stuff, this is the kind of weird stuff that we watched when we were growing up in the 70s. Just crazy stuff. He mentioned Sigmund and the Sea Monster. That's another one. You just do a Google image search on any of the Sid and Marty Krofft stuff, and it's immediately, hey, how much drugs did you guys do when you decided that this would be a good one? Now we've got next is the Banana Splits Adventure Hour, which was on from 68 to 70. We apologize in advance for this show's tra-la-la song, One Banana, Two Banana theme song, getting stuck in your head for days after reading this. H.R. Puffin Stuff puppeteer Sid and Marty Krofft went all in on their psychedelic aesthetic with this late 60s series from Hanna-Barbera. Zany barely covers the show's brand of antics as costumed animal hosts Flegel, Drooper, Bingo, and Snorky did everything from chat with the public to perform hippie rock musical numbers for legions of fans turned baby boomers. The episodes use of laugh tracks aside, watching the kids show is an experience unlike any other. I love the Banana Splits. I loved them. And it was hugely popular. And again, Sid and Marty Krofft. It's amazing the kind of, you know, like people around my age who grew up in, you know, in the generation that I grew up in, how much Sid and Marty Krofft's shows really did, you know, affect us. And here's another one, the Krofft Super Show, which is completely insane. This was on 76 to 78. The Krofts presided over a significant portion of our collective childhoods in the 60s and 70s. Their legacy extended into the Krofft Super Show, a variety show targeting the Saturday morning audience. And if people still could get away with describing things as a hoot anymore, this is what that would be. An impressive mix of hit-or-miss live-action segments and musical numbers, the series was hosted by a rock band by the name of Captain Cool and the Kongs. These are all K's, by the way. Ironically, the series is best remembered by fans for replacing its hosts with the real-life band and then-popular Bay City Rollers. The Krofft Super Show. Again, man, it's just weirdness. Weird. I'm trying to remember the whole Bay City Rollers thing, because they were pretty... You know, the Bay City Rollers were huge, you know, for a little while back in the 70s. But yeah... The Krofft Super Show featuring Captain Cool and the Kongs. All right. Let's take a break here for some weather. And then we'll get back to reminiscing about some of our Saturday morning TV shows. These in particular are some of the more memorable live action Saturday morning shows. What did you guys watch? 312-981-7200. Here is your... the forecast from WGN Chicago Weather Center. Today, a cold start to the day with the temperature starting out near freezing. Sunny in the morning with an increase in clouds and a high near 50. For tonight, mostly cloudy, slight chance of rain showers developing in the evening with a low of 43. Tomorrow, partly sunny and warmer, chance for an evening shower, high in the mid-60s, a little cooler near the lake. For Wednesday, cloudy, windy, mild. Occasional showers and thunderstorms on a high approaching 70. And for Thursday, rain and thunderstorms possible. High near 70. It's currently 33 degrees at O'Hare. It's 34 at Midway, 35 at the lakefront. All right. We'll take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll jump back into Saturday morning TV talk here. And if you want to join us, it's 312-981-7200. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, and the great Steve Cochran at 6 has your morning drive. It's Monday morning, and that means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey, jokey, jokey time, and much more. So we're talking about some favorite sort of live-action Saturday morning shows that you watched when you were a kid and reminiscing about that. What did you watch when you were... when you were growing up on those Saturday mornings? Here's Chris on WGN. Hi, Chris.
Hey, Nick. How's it going?
All right.
You know, speaking of the Banana Splits, my favorite short was Uh-Oh, Chango.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
That was one of the funniest, silliest things I've ever seen on TV.
Yeah, ridiculous.
Where the guy, he couldn't speak a word, but he was just insanely funny.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember.
But yeah, that was it, man. In front of the TV with a bowl of cereal.
Yeah, you got it. All right, Chris. Thanks, buddy.
Bye, Nick.
All right. 312-981-7200. Here's Michael on WGN. Hi, Michael.
Hey, Nick. How you doing?
All right. What's up?
Yeah, that was Danger Island.
Oh, sure. That was good.
Congo.
Yeah, those were classic.
But with Danger Island, it's probably one of the best theme songs in television, you know, shorts history, that theme song. But Jan Michael Vincent, I think that's where he got his start.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. Danger Island, Jan Michael Vincent got his start there. Yeah. Yeah.
And the female that was on that, I'm pretty sure she also played Becky when they did the Huck Finn and Tom Sawyer little skits where, you know, they were live.
Right.
But a lot of the stuff was in cartoon.
Oh, right. Yeah. I'd have to, I still don't remember all the details on that, but yeah. That sounds right.
Yeah, but I'm trying to think of her name, but I'm just too lazy to look her up on the internet.
Yeah. All right. Well, maybe we'll stay tuned and maybe we'll find out.
And one other thing, when we were talking about Land of the Lost.
Yeah.
I believe the character that played Will, I think he played one of the henchmen in the first Conan the Barbarian movie, alongside Ben Davidson. It was a dude with the big wooden hammer.
Yeah, I don't remember.
I think he played that part. I never looked it up. But.
All right, I'll trust you on that. All right, Michael, thanks, man.
All right, take care.
All right, there you go. Here's John on WGN. Hi, John.
Hey, how are you?
All right.
Good. So, yeah, it was the Monkees, and then I forget what channel that was, but then also the ABC every Saturday right after the Monkees would be that federal turning a bill into a law thing. That was pretty funny.
Oh, sure. That's so. Schoolhouse Rock. Schoolhouse Rock.
It was?
Yeah, Schoolhouse Rock.
Pretty crazy. Yep. The Monkees every Saturday morning. Absolutely.
Yeah, me too. All right, John, thanks.
All right, bye.
Yeah, the Monkees Saturday morning. You'd watch the Monkees. That was late in the morning. That was like after all of the, you know, the regular cartoons that are on from like 7 to 9:30 or 10. But yeah, that was late. So they'd be on it like, I think the Monkees were on at like 11 because it was like the Monkees and then American Bandstand. That's how my Saturday mornings, I remember my Saturday mornings would end with American Bandstand. And I think that was on at like noon or something. But yeah. We got a bunch of texts here. It was only on for one season or two, but the Lost Saucer with Ruth Buzzy and Jim Nabors. Anything with Ruth Buzzy, man. Carrie says, Nick, you're spot on with the science programs. Dr. Bunsen and Beaker can't be topped. And Lancelot Link's Secret Chimp had to be one of the strangest. We've talked about Lancelot Link before on the show. Truly one of the weirdest TV shows of all time. I mean, really, truly, one of the weirdest TV shows of all time. It was nothing but chimpanzees in costume. And it was just, if you go back and look at Lancelot Link's Secret Chimp, go online, take a look at it. That was a real thing. It was a real thing. 952 area code says, lots of Westerns in our youth. I liked Sky King. Yeah, the Westerns. My memory of the Western, the old Western reruns that they would show, like on Channel 9 or Channel 32, those run on Sundays. Saturday, for me, I didn't watch a lot of, you know, like that kind of Western kind of stuff. I watched, the kid shows, the cartoons that were on the networks. 573 says HR Puff and stuff is great. Yes, it is. We got a whole bunch of right here. 765 says Shazam ISIS Hour. Yeah, that ran from 74 to 77. And I love the fact that the number one movie at the box office right now is Shazam. But the Shazam ISIS Hour was the big one. Monster Squad, we'll get into that one in a little bit. Lidsville, which we just mentioned. Arc 2, that's another one that we're going to talk about. The Kids from Caper and Space Academy. Lost in Space was one of my favorites. Space Nuts with Bob Denver and Chuck McCann. It was a Sid and Marty Croft production as well. How about Electro Woman and Dinah Girl, Shazam, Land of the Lost, and The Magic Door, which was the Jewish TV show. That was on very early in the morning. Magic Door was one of the. That was Sunday mornings. That was on. Little Rascals, Three Stooges, Scooby-Doo, and Giggle Snort Hotel. 815 area code says they watched it. 920 area code says Soupy Sales and Kukla, Fran, and Ollie. Soupy Sales was funny. I loved Soupy Sales. He was really, really funny. Hey, by the way, coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom right here on 720 WGN. And here's Leo on WGN. Hi, Leo.
Nick, good morning. You just mentioned it. It was a Giggle Snort Hotel, and I think the only reason why I watched it was to watch the Blob laugh.
Yeah. Yeah, good old Blob, which was just a big pile of clay. That Bill Jackson Bill Jackson would form and put fake eyes and mouths and stuff on. But yeah, no, Giggle Snort Hotel.
And Nick, you mean to tell me you built a time machine out of a DeLorean?
Yeah, well, that's, if you're going to do it, do
awesome
it.
Movie.
You're going to do it, you're going to do it with style, is what they say. All right, Leo, thanks, man. Yeah, Giggle Snort Hotel, which was also, actually, it started out as BJ and the Dirty Dragon. The first incarnation of that was BJ and the Dirty Dragon, and then the second one was Giggle Snort Hotel. And I remember I saw BJ and the Dirty Dragon live. They had a live show, and because they used to film it over, if I remember correctly, they used to film it over at FLD used to be over at Marina Tower. So I remember we went to a taping of it or a live show. Of it, and the bad guy on the show, you know, the sort of like the puppet mask bad guy was Dr. Doompuss. He was the bad guy on BJ and the Dirty Dragon, and he freaked me out. I remember when I was a kid, Dr. Doompuss on BJ and the Dirty Dragon used to freak me out. And I remember when we went to see it live, Dr. Doompuss ran out from inside he ran out into the house, you know, into the audience. And then he ran up to me and he looked at me and pointed at me. And I remember I almost passed out. I was so terrified. When Dr. Doompuss pointed at me, that was like, huh? Oh, no. He was a scary dude, Dr. Doompuss. Here's Steve on WGN. Hi, Steve.
Yeah, it was a short-lived, when Fox was a fledgling network. But it was in between cartoons, but a little series called Dynamo Duck.
Mm.
And it was completely bizarre.
Was it around that same time period?
It was live action.
Was it around that same time period, 60s, 70s, that kind of thing?
Yeah, and, when Fox Network was fledgling, we'll call that early 80s.
Oh, so okay, I don't remember that at all then. Yeah,
it was very odd.
Okay, like a lot of TV shows are for kids. All right, Steve, thanks.
Yep.
All right, and let's see. Here's Jeff on WGN. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, Nick. I was always a strange kid. I loved You Were There with Walter Cronkite.
Okay.
And I didn't realize it had been a radio show. I'm a dinosaur. I just started getting into podcasts, and the old radio shows of You Are There, you can pick up as podcasts.
Yeah. All right.
So, I'm still a history fan, and I love your show. So,
thanks
very much.
Thank you, Jeff. Have a good morning.
You too.
All right. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. 708 area code says Sundays with Flash Gordon. Yeah, sure. That was classic. 309 area code says Zoom. 708 area code said Bill Leff was on Magic Door. Yes, he was. We know that. 708 area code says the old Huck Finn short, Becky, was played by Luann Haslam, and Injun Joe was voiced by Ted Cassidy. 847 area code mentions Clutch Cargo and his pals Spinner and Paddlefoot. And we'll get, I knew that at some point Clutch Cargo would pop up. There's no question about it. I knew that was going to happen. Such a distinctively weird show. All right, we're going to take a break here because we've got the news coming up. And then after the news, we'll jump back into this topic. If you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200. Reminiscing about some of these live-action Saturday morning TV shows that we watched. Many of them are just weird. But so we'll break, and the news is coming up after this. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here on WGN. Oh, by the way, Sammy, you're producing this morning. Did they leave my dad's intro for you?
You got it, boss. Okay. Everything's sticking to the plan.
All right. I just wanted to make sure because I forgot to ask. But, okay, we got that. Because my dad's going to call in and tell a joke a little bit later on. And we've got the famous a jingle that we play when my dad comes on to tell the joke. So we got all that coming up right here on WGN. By the way, for those of you who are just tuning in now, Tom got sick right before the show this morning. And Tom Hush, my producer, got sick and had to leave. And so Sammy's been sticking around. You produced WGN Radio Theater, and then you stuck around to help out with us. Anyway, I appreciate that, man.
No problem. It's a pleasure to be here. Pleasure to be aboard on it for once.
All right, man. Cool. All right. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We've been talking about some live-action classic Saturday morning shows, and what did you grow up watching? Lots of weird stuff when I was a kid. We were just mentioning the Shazam Isis Hour, which was on 74 to 77. DC's Captain Marvel was a popular fixture for Saturday morning programming. Before it was the Shazam Isis Hour, it was just known to fans as Shazam, a half-an-hour show that originally aired on CBS Saturday mornings, but then it expanded into an hour. Those extra 30 minutes were devoted to superhero Isis, played by Joanna Cameron, and her adventures when she wasn't posing as a school teacher. Filmation Productions would go on to be famous for their animated He-Man series, where behind the show that still has a very dedicated fan base over 40 years later. The Shazam Isis. Arc 2, which was mentioned a little bit earlier by a texter. And again, if you want to jump in here for talk or text, it's 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. It's too bad Saturday morning TV is no longer a thing because we would love to reboot this short-lived sci-fi series from 1976. Despite its limited production values, Arc 2 made the most out of them to deliver on its environmental and family-friendly premise. The series centers on a trio of scientists trying to help people with when pollution all but ruins planet Earth. While the CBS show only lasted for one season, its altruistic themes are timeless. As climate change increasingly becomes a real threat, the hope Arc 2 inspires is just what the modern audiences need. I very vaguely remember that show. In 1976, I would have been 11. So it was right in my wheelhouse. I probably did end up watching it. I do kind of vaguely. I'm looking at there's a picture, you know, of the people in costume, and it does look like the budget here was like $110. so bad mid-70s budget. And we mentioned Monster Squad, which was, of course, one that I watched, 76 to 77. It was on. No relation to the 80s cult hit movie, The Monster Squad. This live-action series did feature Dracula and the Wolfman, however. It also featured an inspired kid-friendly premise on par with the movie that shares its namesake. Frankenstein joins Drac and Bruce W. Wolf to form the literal squad of crime-fighting monsters. They had a crime computer, naturally known as the Crime Computer. And they had a pretty sweet ride, the Black Monster Van. Our monster heroes also took a page from Batman's playbook. And they gave them utility belts. Now, I'm looking at the picture. I'm looking at the picture, and it just looks ridiculous. I don't even know where to begin on this, but I remember watching it because it was, you know, it had monsters in it. But like the makeup is really, really bad, and it just, yeah. So, but anyway, so that's Monster Squad. A few more texts came in. Mike from Novak Construction. Hey guys, how's it going? The Shazam Isis Hour was one of my favorites. 872 area code says, I enjoyed the test pattern as a kid. Well, there you go. 573, Lost in Space introduced me to my first crush, a young Angela Cartwright. Yeah, man, everybody loved her. Everybody my age was in love with Angela Cartwright. No question about it. 219 area code says, wasn't DJ and the Dirty Dragon originally called Cartoon Town? Yeah, I think it was, but it's BJ and the Dirty Dragon. 815 area code says, Make-A-Wish, Sunday mornings before Giggle Snort. 708 area code says, Pee-Wee's Playhouse, of course. Pee-Wee's Playhouse, one of the greatest TV shows of all time. And, I mean, I was an adult. I was, you know, I was in my 20s when that show was on. And my friends and I taped it. We'd videotape it, and we'd watch it every Saturday night. Every Saturday night, we would watch Pee-Wee's Playhouse, one of the greatest TV shows of all time. I've got the whole set at home. It's fantastic. All right, next here on the in the article is Land of the Lost, which is one of the most popular, from 1974 to 1976. This very popular ABC series from the 70s burrowed its way into the brains of many Young's fans, proving to be a brand that warranted a big-screen adaptation starring Will Ferrell in 2007. The movie was a box office disappointment, but the show's legacy emerged from that failure relatively unscathed. Man, that movie was terrible. That movie was terrible. If you saw Land of the Lost, the Will Ferrell, you know, movie reboot of the series was just pitiful. I think one of the worst movies Will Ferrell ever made. Land of the Lost 2 took two of our favorite things, alternate universes and dinosaurs, and combined them to create a cheesy but entertaining show about the Marshall family's adventures in the realm that's home to dinosaurs. Each week, the Marshalls struggled to survive their new home long enough to find their way back to the real one. And there were these creatures that don't get mentioned in this in the article, but should, the Sleestaks. The Sleestaks were like the like a big part of Land of the Lost. And they were weird little sort of like monster creatures with big bug eyes and weird heads. And those were the Sleestak. That was the name of the creatures, the deadly creatures. How about Big John, Little John from 1976? I remember the name. And I'm looking at the still here, and I'm trying to get my brain wrapped around. I definitely, without question, remember the name. This underseen Saturday morning sitcom that suffered from less than impressive production values, but it's a solid premise that makes it definitely worth revisiting. The first season, which ran for 13 episodes on NBC, told the story of a 40-year-old middle school teacher who drinks from the fountain of youth and then is able to turn into his 12-year-old self. A lot of Big John, Little John's fun came from the complications that come with a teacher being able to turn into a younger version of himself that is around the age of his students. Never mind the more weirder and problematic issues of having Big John's wife and child know his secret. yeah, you know what? I think I'm pretty close to remembering that one. What a premise, though. Jeez. All right. Hey, you guys want to jump in? It's 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Lots of classic Saturday morning TV out there, and we want to hear from you guys. What's your favorite? 312-981-7200. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you want to join us. We've been talking about some of these classic live-action Saturday morning shows that we're reminiscing about and talking about how what we used to watch when we were kids growing up, sitting in front of the TV in our pajamas eating some cereal on a Saturday morning. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Here is White Hen Jim. Hi, Jim.
Hey, Nicky. How are you, buddy?
All right. It's Nick, not Nicky. Thank you.
Well, I'm sorry, my friend.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Hey, Nick. My addition, there were two. Uncle Johnny Coons, of course. And we'd rush home at lunchtime to make sure we had a sandwich and a orange juice or something, watching Uncle Johnny at at lunchtime. And then also there was a program, I think it was called Winky Dink and You. It was a weird little show where you would be, as a viewer, you would be asked to send in for this little kit where they would give you a piece of film that you would put over your TV screen.
Right.
And during the episode, the hero would get into some kind of peril, and you would be asked to, you know, draw him a bridge between two precipices or something, and then right. You watch the guy run across your bridge. So, right.
Yeah, no, I remember. I remember that they actually had a couple of different shows that where they tried to do that. You'd send away for one of these cellophane things that you would stick on the TV, and there was another sort of a thing that you would stick on the TV in order to make it look like it was color when if you just had a black and white set. And for people who don't remember that, there used to be days when there was just black and white TVs. There was not, you know, a black and white set, but you could get this thing and stick it on the screen and it looks like it was color. All right, Jim, thanks for the call. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Here's Jeff on WGN. Hi, Jeff.
Hello.
Hi.
Hey, I have a couple for you. We're about the same age. You remember Run, Joe, Run?
Yeah.
About the German Shepherd?
Yep, I do.
Of course, Lidsville.
Yeah, we mentioned Lidsville a little earlier, yeah.
And H.R. Puff and stuff, right?
Yep.
You remember the Curiosity Shop?
The Curiosity Shop?
Yeah, it used to come on ABC.
No, I don't remember that.
I didn't watch it much either.
All right. Jeff sounds like he's in a wind tunnel. Thank you for the call, Jeff. Jeez. There's a typhoon outside. All right. Thanks for the call. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. 847 area code. Nothing could beat H&R Puff and stuff. And then we got 219 area code says, nothing could beat Sigmund and the Sea Monster. Truly bizarre. All of those things. Very, very weird. 219 area code says, hey, Nick, wasn't there a Shazam on the Flintstones? No, was his name? He was the little Wizzo. Wasn't it? No, Wizzo. No, it's not Wizzo. Was it Shazam or Kazam? Was it Kazam on the Flintstones? The little dude little alien dude that would fly around and do things for Fred? 847 area code, Toxic Avenger. Toxic Avenger? That's not a Saturday morning show. That's a very gross R-rated Lloyd Kaufman comedy. And then 708 area code says Lassie. Yeah, we all watched Lassie. Everybody watched Lassie. How about the Zubily Zoo? This is from 86 to 87. Zubily Zoo. This charming Emmy-winning series was produced locally at WQED in Pittsburgh. And it spared no expense on its visual flair. Zubily Zoo, hosted by actor Ben Vereen, centered on a group of six actors dressed up as animal characters who call the zoo home. Our animal characters spent most episodes breaking into song and dance, impressing young viewers everywhere. Though Zoo ended after one season, it ran for years in syndication, with prominent airings on both the Learning and Hallmark channels. Zoo's 80s production values aside, its songs were wholesome and the atmosphere it more than holds up in 2019. I do remember the show. I guess I may have watched it a couple of times when it was in syndication. When they started to do the reruns in syndication. Zubily Zoo. I don't know where they come up with some of the names for these things. Here's Al on WGN. Hi, Al.
Hey, Nick, how you doing?
All right, what's up?
Saturday morning, there was the Grape Ape Hour.
Oh, sure.
And I think his sidekick was Beasley?
I think you're right, yeah. I just remember he would say, Grape Ape. Grape Ape. That's what I remember.
Getting into some weird stuff, yeah. And I think they had other little skits that were on in that hour, other kind of cartoons. I think there was a guy in an airplane with that dog. I can't remember that. You know what I'm talking about? He was like a villain guy and whatever. Had that weird laugh.
Yeah. That was why am I blanking on the dog's name?
Snidely Whiplash,
and then the dog was what was the dog's name? I can't remember the dog's name now.
I can't either, but I just remember it being that airplane. That dog would just laugh at him all the time.
Right. Yeah. Very funny stuff. All right, Al. Thanks, man.
All right. We'll see you.
What was the name of that dog now? It's going to drive me nuts. Oh, man. I can't remember. Somebody will know, though. What's the dog that goes... the dog, the great races, the airplane, all that stuff.
Going back in the Flintstones, they wanted all the callers are saying Kazoo.
Kazoo, that's it. Kazoo. That's what he was. Oh, yeah. I remember Kazoo. All right. All right, how about this one? 1989 to 1992, Saved by the Bell. Obviously, classic live-action Saturday morning show that everybody watched. When we think of Saturday morning shows, this 80s classic is usually the first in our minds. Once Saved by the Bell found its groove after the original and clunky Miss Bliss days, Zach, AC, Kelly, Lisa, Jesse, Screech, and Mr. Belding became household names, as did the actors playing them. The writing was just okay, but we didn't care. Zach Morris outsmarting Principal Belding or freezing time with his timeout trick kept us entertained. We're still nostalgic for Bell after all of these years and dread the thought of a reboot, unless, of course, it's A Star Is Born take on Zach's band Zach Attack. Yeah, I never even ironically got into Saved by the Bell. I know a lot of people... You know, I know a lot of people did. I was living with my buddy Scott when we were living together. He watched it all the time. Like, all the time. And, yeah. Next here is Pee-wee's Playhouse, which ran from 1986 to 1990. One of the greatest TV shows of all time. Thinking of Pee-wee's Playhouse fills us with a strong dose of nostalgia. Paul Reubens' wacky Imaginarium... full of daily secret words, talking chairs, and disembodied genies, made a significant impact on our young minds and in between bites of cereal while also leaving a lasting footprint on pop culture. Every Saturday, Pee-wee would invite us to hang out with Cowboy Curtis and watch a penny cartoon. Week to week, we never knew exactly what awaited for us, but we could always expect to leave smiling. There wasn't a show like it before, and there really hasn't been one since. It was one of the greatest TV shows of all time. Without question, one of the greatest TV shows ever, one of the most original, one of the most fun. You could be a kid and love it. You could be an adult and love it. We watched it every week, and it was so full of imagination and originality. And, of course, Lawrence Fishburne got his start there. That's where Cowboy Curtis was Lawrence Fishburne. And then that was right after Pee-wee's Big Adventure. Like, Pee-wee's Big Adventure came out in 1985, and then the children's show began about a year later. Never failed to miss it. We never missed it. It was just the best.
You want to take one more guess on the dog's name before I give it to you?
No. What is it?
Muttley.
Muttley, of course. It's Muttley. I should have known that. Muttley. I loved that character. Here's Chris on WGN. Hi, Chris.
Hey, good morning.
Morning.
The kids from Caper.
Kids from Caper.
I don't remember much about the show, but the theme song was in my head for a while.
Oh.
And I think John Lansing might have been on it.
John Hansen?
Lansing. Oh. The writer?
Oh, okay.
No, I'm not sure, but it was one of those live-action detective teenager shows from the 70s.
Okay.
But, man, that was you're mentioning all these great shows.
Yeah, I know.
Thank you.
Okay, take care, Chris. Take care.
Bye.
I don't remember that one. Kids from Caper. Wow. All right, let's break here. We got the news coming up right after this, and then we'll get back to more Saturday morning TV shows. And my dad is going to tell a joke as well. All right, and we will be right back. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, 18 floors above beautiful downtown Chicago. We're here till 5 a.m. Coming up in just a little bit, my dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's Monday, and that's a jokey, jokey, jokey time. He does that every Monday. And we've been talking about some Saturday morning TV shows that we used to watch, particularly the live-action memorable TV shows from our Saturday mornings. And we got a bunch of texts coming in. We'd love to hear from you for text and calls at 312-981-7200. 815 area code says Saturday morning TV shows with real people. Fury, Sky King, The Lone Ranger, real live action that I fondly remember. 217 area code says, I watched Saturday morning TV in the 50s. Who remembers Circus Boy? It starred young Mickey Dolenz, who would later become one of the monkeys. Circus Boy? Wow, all right. No, I don't remember that. 847 area code says, Space Academy. Another one or two season show in the late 70s, I think. It had Pamela Ferdin, one of my first TV crushes, in it. 847 again says Kazoo was on the Flintstones. 630 area code says, hey, Nick, I heard you talk about the Toxic Avenger, but they had a cartoon in 1991 on Saturday mornings. Now I vaguely remember that. Because the Toxic Avenger, the movie, would be insanely inappropriate to base a kid's show on. So that's pretty weird. Let's see. Hey, Nick. I love the Thunderbirds and the Banana Splits. That's from John. 312 area code says, Nick, another program that we watched was Dark Shadows. Well, Dark Shadows wasn't on Saturdays. I mean, maybe after, you know, when it went into syndication. But that was a soap opera. That was on during the week. That was on weekdays. Because I remember when I was a little kid, I used to watch it. It scared the hell out of me. And my mom tells the story about how she would have Dark Shadows on because it was like a soap opera. Something like 11 o'clock in the morning on weekdays. And I remember my mom would tell a story about how I would stand behind the couch. Because for those of you who don't know, that Dark Shadows was like sort of a horror soap opera. And if you watch it now, it's really bad. Really, really bad. But so I used to watch it because there was like a werewolf on it. The main character, Barnabas Collins, was a vampire. So it dealt with like scary horror stuff. Dan Curtis was responsible for it. And it was kind of like a horror soap opera. And I used to watch it, but I would stand behind the couch, my mom would say, and I would stick my head out and watch it, and then I'd freak out and stick my head back behind the couch, and my mom would say to me, she tells me that she would say to me, I'll change this if you want, I'll turn it off. And I would be like, no, I want to watch it, but I'd stand behind the couch because I was scared. But my mom, you know, she was like, no, I'll turn it off if you want. No, leave it on. So, good old Dark Shadows. All right, here's Tony on WGN. Hi, Tony.
Yo, Nick D, what's going on,
How
man?
How you doing, man?
Oh, man, you know me. I'm still breathing this Monday morning. I can't complain.
All right, man. What's up?
Hey, I got two. Like I said, I don't know if they got mentioned. Jason Star Command and Captain Kangaroo.
Oh, okay. Yeah, Captain Kangaroo, legend.
Oh, yeah. Bob Keeshan.
Yep, Bob Keeshan. Had some serious hair.
Oh, yeah. Hey, do you remember Jason Star Command? The only one character on there I can remember was Tamara Dobson's character, and we all know who she was.
Oh, yeah. I forgot she was on that show, man.
Oh, yeah, she's the only person I can remember from that show.
Well, I can understand why you remembered her, Tony.
Cleopatra Jones. You can't beat that.
You can't, man. That's the best. All right, Tony, thanks, man. Have a good day, all right?
You too, Nikki.
Take care, buddy. There you go. Let's see. Wrap Around from 1988. I don't remember this at all. Armed with one of the catchiest and very 80s opening credits. Anybody remember Wrap Around? And it's R-A-P. Wrap Around. One of the very catchiest, one of the catchiest and very 80s opening credit themes, Wraparound, is an all but forgotten Saturday morning gem from local Boston TV that centered on topical issues facing teens. The show tackled gangs, violence, politics, and gun-related topics in PG-friendly ways. Host Tom Bergeron... Wow, host Tom Bergeron seemed like an odd choice to MC the proceedings, but his town hall-like approach with the panel of kids, coupled with his sincere way of engaging them, proved very effective, so much so you wish Bergeron would host more shows like this and less live dance competitions. I do not remember that at all. I would love to see footage of it. I'm going to look around on YouTube for that, because that sounds pretty fascinating. Tom Bergeron, a bunch of kids taking on politics and tough topics. Wrap Around. Yeah, I don't remember that at all. How about Funhouse? From 1988 to 1991. Oh, there's some serious 80s hair here in this picture. Oh, and this dude, one of the dudes that's on the show, has got a serious mullet. This guy's got a fantastic mullet. A Double Dare-esque game show, Funhouse, was on from 88 to 91. It aired at Kids. This syndicated series was arguably more fun than the Nickelodeon show, thanks to the life-size house that was home to an obstacle course for contestants. Hosted by J.D. Roth. This guy's got some... I mean, I'm serious about this guy's mullet. It's unbelievable. It pitted two teams against each other. I can't stop looking at this guy's mullet. After answering questions, players would advance through messy physical challenges leading to the titular house finale. As preteens, Funhouse was entertaining. We just wanted to go into that house and win a pair of sneakers from sponsor British Knights. They were as prevalent as JD's 80s sweaters. So he's got a fantastic... This guy's unbelievable. You got to see this picture of this guy, J.D. Roth, Funhouse. Just do like a Google image search of that and then enjoy this guy's mullet because it's pretty spectacular. And he's got like stonewashed jeans and a bad 80s sweater on. Oh, that's just amazing. So that is an impressive mullet, I must say. 312-981-7200 is the phone number right here on WGN. Here is Tom on WGN. Hi, Tom.
Hey, good morning, Nick.
Hi.
I've called before and got on a couple of times. I can't remember your producer's name, or I would have said hello, but it was Hush.
Yeah.
What nickname did you come up with for him?
For Fly Jams Friday?
Yeah.
Luscious Hushes.
Okay. All right, I got one that has stumped me for 20-some years. I'm 68, but back in the late 50s or early 60s, there was a show called Jabberwocky Place.
Ooh, okay.
And I've Googled it numerous times, can't find a thing about it. But it was like J-O-B-B-L-E, Wocky, however you spell Wocky. Jabberwocky Place.
I couldn't find
anything about it. I don't remember much about it other than I believe it was on Saturday mornings.
That does not ring a bell at all.
Yeah, well, you got to find somebody old.
Yeah.
Yeah, nobody in their 50s is going to remember it.
Yeah, I don't remember it. I don't remember it.
Yeah.
But if you're looking it up and you can't find it online, that's kind of weird.
Yeah, that's what I thought. But, you know, even if I was spelling it wrong, you know, there should be somebody there in China that corrects my spelling.
Yeah, that's right. All right, Tom, there thanks.
All right, thanks. Check it out.
Jabberwocky Place. All right. 217 area code says, intrigued by your Dr. Doompuss story. Can't find an image of him. Please describe. He wore a cape, and it was a puppet face, so it was like a big head. Whatever actor was inside the costume had this big, and his nose was really long, and he was really really old looking, gray hair, had a really scary scowl on his face. But yeah, Dr. Doompuss, he scared me, man. From BJ and the Dirty Dragon. 815 Erico says, hey, Nick, I seem to remember a sci-fi show called Space Academy. Yeah, with Peepo the Robot. P-E-E-P-O. Peepo the Robot. All right. Reminiscing here about some of these Saturday morning TV shows. We've been talking about the live action TV shows and some of the other ones that we used to watch in the morning. So we're going to break here. We got weather, and then my dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time, and then we'll wrap everything up here with our Saturday morning TV talk. But here's your forecast from the WGN Chicago Weather Center today. Cold start to the day with the temperatures starting out near freezing. Sunny in the morning with an increase in clouds in the afternoon and a high near 50. Tonight, mostly cloudy, slight chance of rain showers developing in the evening with a low of 43. For tomorrow, partly sunny, warmer, chance for an evening shower, high in the mid-60s, a little cooler near the lake. Wednesday, cloudy, windy, mild, occasional showers and thunderstorms and a high of 70. And then Thursday, rain and thunderstorms possible and a high of 70. It is currently 33 degrees at O'Hare. It's 34 at Midway and 35 at the lakefront. All right, we'll take a little break here. When we come back, my dad will we'll be calling in, and he will tell his weekly Monday morning joke right after we break here on 720 WGN.
Ooh, it's the best part of the week, baby. It's time to hear something funny. Here we go with your music intro. Ah!
It's a jokey time. It's a jokey time. Nick's dad tells a joke.
Yeah. What'd I say?
It's a jokey time. It's a jokey time. Nick's dad tells a joke.
Ah, yes! Here we go!
All right. There you go. Welcome back, everybody. You know that that's a that's our theme that we hear every Monday morning where my dad likes to tell a joke. Also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. All right. So every Monday morning, my dad tells a joke. Let's bring him on now. Hey, Dad.
I'm Nick.
How are you, Dad?
Good. How are you?
All right. How's Mom?
Doing good.
Good. Okay, you got a joke.
Joke number 250.
Oh, this is number 250. Okay. Here we go.
The devil challenges God to a baseball game. God said, you can't win. I have all the great players like DiMaggio, Root, Ted Williams, and more. Devil replies, said, no problem. I have the umpires.
All right.
I don't know how Schwarber would think about that.
Yeah. Well, yeah. There you go. All right, Dad.
All right.
Thanks, buddy.
Take care, Nick.
There you go. That's my dad telling a joke. Making a little timely little joke there, too, with Schwarber going a little bit crazy with the ump the other day. All right.
It was jokey time. It was a jokey time. Nick's dad told a joke.
You go. He'll do it again next week. So, all right. Let's wrap everything up here. We're talking about...
You can do the Schwarber joke in there.
Sorry?
Mr. DiGio is a good guy. Do the Schwarber joke in there.
He threw the Schwarber in there, yeah. All right. We're talking about the Saturday TV morning shows here, live action ones, too. And let's see. 847 area code says Dennis the Menace. 773 said Puff the Magic Dragon. 847 says, hey, Nick, Space Ghost. I liked Space Ghost Coast to Coast. let's see. I used to get up at 6 a.m. every Saturday to watch a show called The Big Picture. It was a show about military equipment in World War II. 262 area code. Did anyone mention the New Zoo Review? Oh, no. Nobody mentioned the New Zoo Review. I'm surprised it took this long for that to get mentioned. Oh. Hey, Nick, do you remember Dr. Shrinker, Run, Joe, Run, and Wonder Bug from the mid-70s? Let's see. Let's go to Linda on WGN. Hi, Linda.
Hi, good morning. Yeah, here's some that you guys were probably too little to know. Circus Boy, Mickey Dolenz played in that one.
Yeah, somebody texted that one in.
And Buster Crabbe was with a space program with Ming.
Yeah, that's Flash Gordon.
The evil one.
Flash Gordon.
We also had Buster Brown's show in the morning. It was with Andy Devine, and they had Buster Brown and his dog Tide, and they played Little Rascals and tons of fun, different little programs like that on Saturday morning.
Mm-hmm.
Wild Bill Hickok, Annie Oakley, what the heck else? Oh, there was so many of them. They were mostly all Westerns, like Roy Rogers.
Right.
Hopalong Cassidy and stories like that. And Schoolhouse Rock. Did anybody say that
yeah,
one?
Yeah, we talked about Schoolhouse Rock. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. But it seemed like when I was growing up, there was a lot that they had, like, on Saturday serials in the movie theaters. They start putting them on Saturday mornings on TV.
Right.
Along with a lot of your cartoons.
Right.
Crazy Cat and Coco the Clown. And there was a few others. But, you know, they should bring some of them back for the kids.
Well, they have a lot of the these retro shows you can actually get. And not only that, you can get them online. And that's, you know, kids go online. They go to YouTube. They go to a lot of these, a lot of the websites where they can watch this stuff. And a lot of it's been saved. And a lot of it is out there on the web where people can watch it. Linda, thank you for the call. 312-981-7200. Here's Bob on WGN. Hey, Bob.
Yeah, good morning.
Morning.
Yes. Jabberwocky Place. I remember it.
Okay.
I grew up with it. It was a weekday show. It was on Channel 7 back when Channel 7 wasn't WLS, but was WBKB in Chicago.
Okay.
And it was a husband and wife. I can't think of the wife's name, but the husband, his name was Terry Bennett. And what was strange was they did this kids show during the week. Terry Bennett hosted a horror show where they showed old Universal horror movies on Channel 7 on Saturday nights called Shock Theater.
Sure, of course. Yeah.
And he wore a black turtleneck, I remember. He was like a beatnik kind of a guy. But he and his wife did this kids show, and it was on in the mornings. And after that was another show with a guy named Jimmy Stewart and his wife, and they did a show called Here's Geraldine.
Mm-hmm.
And it was with a puppet that was a giraffe.
Okay.
And these were local shows on Channel 7.
Right. Okay. Well, that was what the other listener was talking about.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Cool. All right. Thanks, okay. Bob. Take care.
Yep.
Have good a good night. Day. 312-981-7200 is Rich on WGN. Hey, Rich.
Hey, Nick. How you doing?
All right. What's up?
Someone must have texted it in, but I said, Run, Joe, Run. It was like about a guy driving around looking for his dog, like it was a police dog that was, I don't know the exact premise of it, but oh my God, I loved it as a kid.
Run, Joe, Run.
Yeah.
All right. Very cool. Somebody did mention that one. I guess that was a pretty popular one.
Thank you very much for your show, Nick.
Take care. All right. Let's see. How about this one? My Secret Identity was on from 88 to 91. If there's anything better than low-budget Canadian-produced Saturday morning sci-fi, we don't want to know about it. Jerry O'Connell stars as a Marty McFly wannabe, thanks to a local eccentric scientist stand-in for Doc Brown. He's hit with a photon beam, which endows him with superpowers like flight. This syndicated series, designed for all ages, aired in some markets on Saturday, making it a cheesy but welcome staple to our usual roster of animated programming. It was one of the most underrated and catchy theme songs from that era as well. We're getting a lot of theme songs here. There's also the Super Mario Brothers Super Show from 1989. WWE's Captain Lou as Mario? Oh, my God. This is Life Before, Life After casting. And we've spent the last 30 years stuck in the Life After part. The mix of animated cartoon shorts and live action to Super Mario Brothers Super Show was an essential part of growing up as a Nintendo kid. After playing the original Mario game, kids could watch the 2D cartoon exploits of your favorite plumber with Luigi 2. A recent rewatch held up not well. But in hindsight, we still get a kick out of the zany adventures of the Nintendo mascots with Captain Lou Albano as Mario. All right. Let's see. Irwin says, don't forget the Groovy Ghoulies. Oh, I love the Groovy Ghoulies. Loved it. 724 area code said Jabberwockies was a kid's show like Romper Room. It originated in Boston in the 70s, and it ran in syndication nationwide until the 90s. Two words, Nick. Giggle Snort Hotel. Everybody remembers Giggle Snort Hotel. 262 area code says, what about the Bugaloos? 708 area code says, the blob on Giggle Snort Hotel was creepy. I thought the blob was adorable. 847 area code says, Ultraman. Classic. 726 area code says Dr. Shrinker and Wonderbug were part of the Croft Super Show, which featured 3 to 5 shows within a show, within one show. 847 American Bandstand and Captain Kangaroo, and then 262 area code says Shock Theater. That's the second time we mentioned that in the past couple of minutes. How about the Super Kid, the Kid Super Power Hour with Shazam? The Kid Super Power Hour. It was as if an ice show minus the ice, an American Bandstand had a baby. that sounds pretty intriguing. And then Pryor's Place with Richard Pryor, believe it or not, this Saturday morning, the CBS Saturday morning show ran for one season in a deep, deep cut for fans, airing at the height of Richard Pryor's celebrity. Pryor's Place, which is a children's show, was an odd but welcome departure for the late comedian known for his very, very R-rated profanity. Each week, Pryor would interact with an entertaining cast of puppets and children, Sesame Street style. But unlike Sesame Street, Pryor's show took on more serious issues and had mindful discussions about them with a young cast of children. Given the current climate, we could use a Pryor's Place today. Kind of interesting that you would think that the last person on the planet that would have a kid's show would be Richard Pryor, knowing his material. So there you go. All right, going down memory lane there. All right, we're going to take a break here. We got the news coming up next. And we'll be back tomorrow, 2 for Tuesday, and much more. And hopefully our good friend Tom Hush will be 100% and back producing tomorrow morning. We hope he feels well. All right.